You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Hello everyone, Shannon Guth here, getting you ready for our week 9 coverage of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. Mike and I spoke to my brother, Jason Gates, on the recap, which was a lot of fun. We discussed everything that went down in the episode, and then some. I think, you know, you'll see when you get to it. And then Mike spoke to Sean on the exit after that at about 2 hours and 17 minutes if you want to skip ahead. Until then, I hope you enjoy, and I will see you on the other side.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
Hello everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. I'm your host Shannon Guth, here to discuss episode 9. It was an interesting episode. It was a bit of a come down from last week, but still so much subterfuge and a lot of complexities happening. And to discuss it all, I'm so excited because I get to discuss, every week I get to discuss Survivor South Africa with two of my favorite people. And today I'll be doing that together instead of individually, which saves me a lot of time. So first, please welcome my amazing co-host, the Kieran to my immunity, the great Mike Bloom. Mike, thank you for being here.
Thank you, and I'm happy to have you around my neck, Shannon.
Yes, of course, as we do every week. We go together. That's what it's about. And long may it last, I say.
I think so, too. Maybe not so great for Kieran, but great for us.
Yeah, I mean, he is winning immunity. If he wins every immunity till the end, he probably will win the show. So
that would be wild if, yeah, like, in this hyper-strategic, arguably game-body season, if Kieran's able to do what no other player in Survivor history has done, win every single individual immunity challenge.
Yeah, I mean, crazy things have happened? Probably not. That would be pretty wild, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think that would be truly the most ludicrous outcome. But if somehow, knowing this cast, like, Kieran would give away his necklace to Santini, who would then throw it into the fire, yeah, or something, and then burn the concept of individual immunity, so there are still ways to go, even if Kieran is able to somehow win every single individual immunity challenge the next 8 or so over the course of the rest of the season.
Well, now that I've compared it to our relationship, if he truly loves us and our friendship, then he should win every single one and keep it and win the game that way. So, Kieran, we're counting on you, and that will tell how much you care about us as people. So no pressure on that. But I also want to invite over someone who is, again, as I said, one of my favorite people. He is a Survivor super fan and also my brother slash intern. It is the great Jason Gates. Jay, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a little intimidating following all your amazing guests, but I'm going to do my best with it and we're going to have a lot of fun.
Look, nepotism is a good thing, Jay. You either win Survivor, you go on Survivor, you're Rob, etc., or you, and that's fine.
Yeah. So no, hard wait, to become no, a wait, podcaster wait, wait, and I just get the easy road.
We just have to set this up, though. I'm sorry. This is not a Survivor podcast if we don't do it this way. All right, Shannon, who do you want to see coming out right now as your guest on the podcast?
My cat. I want my cat.
Oh, all right. Sleeping? Well, we got the next best thing. Your brother Jason, come on out.
That's fine. Woo!
Ooh, I'm running towards you now.
Yeah, and sister Jay, come on, you're Survivor Super sister. That's what you have to do. Survivor Super fan. Yeah, failed at the first hurdle.
Jason, I'm loving what I'm seeing right now. The thing is, you're like Shannon, but with a penis. What's that like?
Jason, welcome to Full Bloom. I'm sorry.
I don't know how to react to this.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to put on my best Jeff Probst weird family comment face.
The crazy thing is, you're not parents or children. But this is actually something he said, right? So
no, he says the thing about a brother-sister relationship is that neither one of you is the parent, is the, I believe, the direct Jeff Probst quote.
We can confirm that's true, right? Mm. Yeah.
So I would hope so, yeah.
You've heard it here from siblings. first off, that we are, neither of us is the parent. We are siblings. And Jason, you know, if anyone who listened to him on Survivor Global, which we did Winners at War last year, like, I've always credited the fact that I can podcast at all to the fact that Jason and I have been having hours-long conversations about Survivor since we were very young. And that is, that's everything I have in terms of discussing Survivor. So, like, I, you know, we've definitely gone through this whole season together, through the preseason, talking about it. So I wanted Jason to come on and talk about it with us.
So all that being said, Jason, talk. What do you think about Survivor South Africa Immunity Island so far?
Yeah, I'm loving this season. I think Survivor South Africa is unquestionably the best Survivor franchise at the moment. I don't know if you disagree with that, but this season as well, I mean, there's been some criticisms about the lack of personal content. For me, it's hard to divorce the preseason content from that because we got so much personal content there. But, you know, we did also get that personal content in the family videos, so I kind of felt satisfied with that. And then just that I love Immunity Island. It just creates all these decisions for us to analyze every week. The cast has been so incredible, and they're just such sophisticated players. You know, they're not making the mistakes of getting into fights, and it's just really fun to analyze all the decisions.
I mean, some of them are making similar mistakes to that, and we can talk about it.
Because I like how you say that, Jason. Remember, we're going to talk this episode about someone who sits down at a picnic table and announces to everyone, friends and enemies alike, okay, let's all look for the clue together, people.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about the season. Like, there is, all the game bots who make really rational decisions a lot of the time, and whether you agree with it or not, like, it's probably coming from a place of extreme logic. And then there's Santini, right? And that's, like, the chaotic element. It's kind of fun. It's like, let's just, like, put these game bots who... I mean, Santini's a huge fan, but, like, let's put these people who just are going to think about it really in that very strategic way, and then let's put in a chaotic element who will make a lot of strategic decisions, but then usually couched in emotion, and I think this episode the most was, like, pure chaos and emotion, and I was like, Santini, what is happening? Like, the look on my face, I was just like, Santini, we're losing the logic a little bit. Like, I'm kind of concerned about the way that this is going.
Santini has to be, I think, without question, the messiest player I have ever seen make the post-merge of a Survivor season, and I am rolling around in this mess and muck right now like a gleeful little pig. I love it. I love the fact that for some reason she decides to sell out Inesu to the Zambas because she's angry that she voted with the Vunas, but Inesu didn't, even though I think that was the plan. I'm still not sure what the plan was. I love that she tells everyone to look for the clue, and then loses the clue that was right in front of her, and then curses the fact that she made everyone look for the clue. Like, Santini is incredibly unfiltered. Like, we see so much of her, both good and not so good, and it is so much fun. It is baffling to break down from our perspective, but I'm going to call this right here. No matter where she finishes from here on out, she is doing a deep dive with you and I, Shannon, if you're willing to come on, because I need to get her thoughts about each and everything she's doing out there, all that TV gold.
I mean, obviously, she's the main character of the season, as we have said. And yeah, I mean, it went in a concerning direction. My favorite confessional from Santini in this episode was she was like, look, there's a lot of lying and deceiving, but it wasn't meant to be this way. Even like she knows the way that it's gone. Jay, what are you thinking about Santini in this episode? Because for me, it was kind of a turn, because I do really think that we've, you know, she's leading the chizzy. We've agreed with her decisions. I feel like they've been logical, but they're always couched with, you know, you get the confessional about, I'm making this move that will give me power. Also, they made me feel like a third wheel. And you're like, all right, have that emotional response. Like, you're doing the right thing, or you're doing something that will help you in the game. But this time I felt like you were making, like, negative, possibly quite destructive choices. People are not into it. And it felt purely emotional in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, last week she made that emotional decision about telling everyone about the idol, and then it kind of backed into it being a good move because then everyone believed that she was a double agent. And this week she was just making the emotional decision about revealing Inesu, and it was clearly not a good decision. So I love Santini. She's an amazing character. She's done a lot of good moves, but clearly just has that weakness as a player, which makes her all the more interesting as a character.
I think that last week with Tyson, like, I felt like that was logical. As much as she was like, it's my idol anyway. And like, again, you get the emotional confessional, but you could find logic in it. That logic was, at the time, she was desperate. Vuna didn't have the number. She jumped ship, and it would have got her to close enough to Zamba at the time. You know, it would have gotten her a few spots higher on Vuna when Zamba had control, and then she flips back. So, like, I still thought that was logical. For me, like, my jaw dropped when she added an SU, because to me, this was for the first time, the first actual purely negative emotional thing.
I still felt like that was coming from a place of anger last week, so I still felt like it was emotional.
But every single decision she makes comes from emotion, but has some strategic gain, I think. But this one had zero strategic gain, was actively against your own game, and was emotional. Like, last time, she flips like she was in a desperate and a bad situation at the time. Like, it wasn't a great situation to flip, but it was better than being on the bottom with Vuna and having nowhere to play. And there was emotion attached to it. Like, that's what Santini has been. This time, I just could not understand why she flipped on an Esu.
Well, I really wonder if there is something about the fact that they aren't necessarily together. I think what I've sort of wrapped my mind around or tried to in this episode is that we thought, okay, there are Nesu and Santini here as the double agents. But I think what we actually have is something, I want to say, unique to at least 20 years of Survivor that I have watched, which are two independently minded free agents in this game, and that it's not necessarily like the Wu and Tony, we're going to flip back and forth every vote together. It's not Inesu and Santini seemingly checking in with each other to figuring out which way they want to vote. It seems like the story we're being told is that these are two people who feel like they're already on the bottom of this Vuna majority, which we will certainly talk about as well. You know, I think this episode is by far the most straightforward one we had besides the Keon episode, but at least I think it did a good job of at least setting up what's to come next. And it seems like they both have their own resentments with their place in the current totem pole, but it doesn't necessarily seem like they're working together. It seems like the Zambas were trying to have to put in almost double the work of currying the favor of both of them to possibly sway them over. So that's going to be really unique. Again, it could all change next week that these two are going to be the ones to really be the fulcrum and the, you know, the Lisa Welch and Michael Scoopin go back and forth each and every vote. But right now, it really does seem like they're not working in tandem, which is one reason why I think Santini, who seemed to be a bit jealous of the way that the Zambas sort of welcomed Inesu back with open arms, was like, okay, no. Let me pull up the wool that was pulled over everyone's eyes. She is not working with you. But also, the Zambas didn't seem to care about that anyway.
I think that's a great point, Mike. I mean, we haven't really seen any sort of strategic conversation between Inesu and Santini the whole time. So it really seems like they're operating independently. And that kind of makes me think that last week their votes were also independent and that Inesu just decided to vote with the other side and Santini didn't. There wasn't any discussion about that.
I mean, that's interesting because we have thought the whole time, we didn't really get an explanation of why Santini was the one to vote with Vuna and to out her vote there. I think we have to assume that they wanted to protect against any split and that I think it had to have been a team decision, even if it wasn't a team decision between Santini and Nesu being like, hey, we're the, you know, we are the decoys, we are the double agents here. How are we going to play this? Okay, do you want to out yourself? Do I want to out myself? Should we, like, do scissors, paper, rock for this, like, unfortunate thing about who's going to get screamed at back at camp and who's going to be able to just, like, sleep kindly next to the Zambas? I think, for me, I would assume that maybe it was, like, a Vuna decision, that maybe, like, Kieran and Tyson are like, all right, Inesu, you're the double agent for the next week, and Santini, you're out of yourself. And neither of them seem very happy with that position. That's what's funny. Like, I think for Santini, as you said, Mike, like, definitely jealousy. The fact that she comes back and she's purely the one who everyone's mad at when she knows it was both of them. You're the one who, like, fed us wrong information, et cetera, et cetera. Like, we see that fight. She's super jealous that Inesu can just go forward and be happy. And I think she feels not supported enough by the Vunas, which is, like, a long-running theme that she seems to have, that they aren't supporting her more, and the fact that she took one for the team in that way. But Inesu also seems to hate being the double agent, which is something we can talk about, and that she can't be close enough to Vuna and she can't have the conversation. So, like, neither one of them is very happy. And I do wonder who made that decision about who would out themselves. And I don't think it was a conversation between Santini or Inesu, because as you're saying, Jay, like, we haven't seen that conversation ever between them, any conversation. And I would say that, well, I don't think it might have been individual as such, like, they didn't discuss it. I would just say that it was probably a team decision that neither one of them necessarily had a ton of control over.
I think Santini's behavior in this episode makes sense, going back to the whole, you know, I'm not sure what she's doing at this point. I saw a secret scene this week. It was like a super quick 45-second scene, but she basically vocalizes her strategy. Of course, in a Santini fashion, it is out loud to the other players for some strange reason. But she basically, like, turns to Nicole and she says, you know, you can rely on immunities to help get you to the end. Maybe she's not manifesting what you're trying to put out there, Shannon, with your
single immunity, Anthony.
Okay, but she says, I can't do that. So I have to use alliances where I'm completely in the loop. And I think that is the key phrase that we have to use to determine what decision is Santini going to make at every turn. Is, does she feel like she is being included in a group? Because remember, that's what, when she caused all that chaos on Tuba back in the pre-merge, it was because she felt neglected by the Mike Laws Carla contingent. And then she turned on Paul because she felt neglected by him as well. So I think what it really comes down to is, you know, who is treating her best. And I think an understated moment of this episode is when Kieran is trying to sort of tighten the screws on the Anella decision. Santini pushes back, and we'll certainly talk about that, and says, no, 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 it's got to be Sean. And Kieran says, okay. He lets up off the gas because I think he realizes the position that she's in right now. If he pushes her too hard, knowing how Santini is motivated, she is very clearly going to go over to the other side, which she still might. But at least in that moment, I think she felt courted enough to stick with the Vunas.
I mean, she openly said that the other side was treating her badly to Amy. So it seems like she's geared up for a flip. I mean, to me, it looks like both Santini and Inesu are going to flip next week. And that this episode was really a win for OG Zamba, even though they lost a member, because they no longer have the threat of the double agent. Even though history will record this as a vote for OG Vuna, they now have flipped Inesu and Santi for future weeks. And they lost the least core member of their alliance. Like, they effectively sacrificed a bishop instead of sacrificing a queen, which would have been Anella. And now they're poised next week to get the majority.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we'll talk about Zamba. I loved everything they were doing in this episode, especially Amy. I feel like people should watch Amy's game in this episode before they go out to play, just in case they're ever on the back foot, because I think she played it perfectly. And I love the way that you describe it as sacrificing a bishop. Like, Inesu comes to them and is like, it's not going to be any of the core names. And the way that Amy talks about that with Sean, like, she effectively gets him to sign his own death warrant, which I love. Like,
it was
like,
brutal.
Yeah, it was a lethal conversation where she's like, for our alliance to survive, like, we need to do this. To make some turn against his best interest, which we'll talk about. And she knows that when the alliance is surviving, like, it's not going to be him, but, like, stick with the team while you in this individual game and, like, go to the jury, and then we might survive next week. So I loved everything she was doing. But to talk a little bit more about Santini before we move on, we got a question from Edmo, who says, when should everybody cut their losses with Santini? Now, this question made me laugh out loud because I was like, it's so true. Literally, every group needs her number, but she's such a volatile ally that, like, no one should really use her. Like, as we said, like, she's insisting on a target. Like, who wants to work with someone like that who's insisting on a target? Probably, you know, the wrong target. That's because she has kind of flipped, and because of her own emotional connections, that she is suggesting Sean, and because it is better for OG Zamba, and they're winning this week, and he has to relent on that, and it is the right decision to relent. Who wants to work with that? Like, she flipped 2.5 times in two episodes of this merge, and even Inesu was like, yeah, I'll have to work with Santini and Chappie to kind of flip this thing, as much as we don't see them connecting, and she just sold out Inesu in this very episode. So I think that she is a danger going forward. I think it has gotten, as she says, like, it wasn't meant to be this chaotic. I think she's kind of losing the thread of her own game a little bit in a concerning manner. And I am worried for her about where this is going to go. Like, you can say that there are game reasons for things. There have been up till now. She maybe thinks from a game perspective how bad it looks on her that she was the bad guy at this merge and not Inesu. But it's, like, such a short-term problem because Inesu was almost about to come out as being a double agent too. So, I don't know. Like, it was to the point where I thought maybe she would flip just because Warada gave immunity to Tyson. And that would have been such an emotional, erratic decision to do in the moment. And I believe she would do it. And I don't know that I would have believed she would do it last episode, but that's how erratic it's become for me. And that's the shift of this episode for me.
I don't know. This might be me hopefully manifesting, but I'd also like to think that people out there might be beginning to regard Santini as a jury goat. Because I think
sad.
Ooh, hot take.
Well, because I think, yeah, she's doing some stuff, but at the same time, you know, she is also betraying people. And, you know, let's look, for example, the person she recently put on the jury is someone like Sean. While actually, I think, commend Santini, I think her specifically targeting Sean was the right decision, because Sean seemed to be the only one at this moment who was putting Santini's name in other people's mouths, right? That was his entire game this episode, was throwing her under the bus. You get rid of that person pronto if you're someone like Santini. So good on her for being able to, you know, sort of be that stone statue in the mud that people had to work with rather than sort of navigate around to get, you know, essentially someone who kept spreading her name through the muck booted. But I got to feel like you're looking at, OK, Sean's on the jury. You know, Marisha's on the jury and Santini voted against her. You know, is she necessarily putting people on the jury that would do her the respect of giving her a vote in the end? I could certainly see a perspective where people feel like she's too flippant. She's emotionally volatile. She's pissing off too many people. She is someone I could easily sit next to at the end. And so I do think there is viability to keeping her around, if only due to the fact that I still think there are much bigger threats. Yes, Santini could be this the person that like stabs you in the front, the back, the side, basically 360 mm-hmm. degrees. But I could very much see at this point, especially with at this moment, it essentially being 4 versus 3 with 3 people in the middle, that those 4 and 3 are essentially just all only focused on targeting each other at the moment as the big threats left in the game.
I think it's too early, though, for people to start be thinking about jury goats. I mean, Santini is still a very real threat at the moment. She's very volatile. I think, you know, if Kieran hadn't relented, there's a very real chance that she just switches over in this exact vote. So she is a real threat, but I don't think they can get rid of her yet because they still need her number, especially as she potentially comes with Chappie. So I think around the final 7, potentially, we'll see the other sides maybe come together and start voting her out.
Yeah, I mean, they absolutely need her number. I think if they could sacrifice her numerically, like, they should be getting rid of her soon. You can talk about goats all you want. Like, she's a powerful player, she can be erratic, and she will screw over your game 15 times before you're able to get rid of her. Like, I think that they should get rid of her, but I just don't think that they can. Like, none of them could afford it. Not one of the 3 factions that we're seeing, which is, like, this uncomfortable middle group of her, Inesu, and Chappies. And, like, Inesu and her, as we're saying, not super connected, but Inesu needs her. Zumba need her. OG Vuna, the Vuna 3 need her. Like, I think that it's a concerning way for this to go. So, yeah, I would agree that it's too early for them to be thinking about Santini in that way. I don't know. I feel like there was such a massive shift in Santini's game for me in this. And she vocalizes it herself. But, yeah, it went to a concerning place for me in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just honestly about where does she feel comfortable at the moment? And it could just be a matter of, like, she'll make her final flip next episode and feel welcomed in by the Zambas, and they'll, you know, keep their swing vote nice and warm like a pet they welcomed in from the rain so that she would never want to go back into the alley again. But I completely agree with you both that, you know, we have seen in the past situations where 2 factions will gang up and take out the swing vote. Of course, I think Christy Smith is a big example of this. I don't think we're getting that. And again, I think it's because the Tyson Karen Warda trio and the OG Zambas still have each other in their sights for the moment. I do not think they're going to come to some sort of armistice for the time being and be like, all right, I know we want to take each other out, but like, isn't Santini the worst? Can we just get rid of her right now? I don't think anyone's willing to lay down arms at this point to do that.
Well, the divide is too big based on the last vote. And I do think, like you say, well, it's good on her for getting rid of Sean. He's the only one throwing her name around. Multiple people in this episode did allude to one day getting rid of her. Like, even Amy and Nicole were saying, like, hopefully one day. Like, they're not loving working with her. Kieran as well was like, let's keep her keen until we, you know, cut her. I think they're all thinking about it. It's just that they all have other options that they can work with her and get like other gains, whereas Sean didn't have anything, so he went to like the easiest thing, which was like, let's just get rid of erratic Santini, which was never going to happen. I don't think that anyone's working with her because at this point that they want to. I think it's like totally out of necessity, and that is concerning, especially for a woman who needs to feel super super included. So they better be like the best actors of all time. Some of them seem to be doing really well with that, but they better make her feel like they want her so badly when I don't think that any of them really do right now.
Yeah, I don't see those 2 sides ever working together. I mean, you've got Tyson, who's so Vuna strong, and then you've got Wada, who's openly antagonistic towards the other side. So I think it's only once those 2 have been voted off that maybe we could see Kieran work with the other side. And at that point, maybe Santini will go home.
Right. But I guess the question is, you know, if we're talking about who the Zambas want to take aim for, because it seems like they are just like they have Warda's number, right? Which is really interesting. For as much as we talk about Warda hating Anella and, you know, pissing off the other side, they really like to vote her out because they feel like she's sneaky. They feel like she's a threat. And so despite that, though, I feel like if they could take shots at those 3, you got to go for Kieran and Tyson first, right? Considering what they've been showing so far.
they're the biggest threats, but I feel like they're still just going to go for Wilder because they've got so many bad relationships. I mean, it was quite funny. I watched the voting confessions this week, and Smash's voting confession, he was like, there's nothing personal against Wilder. I've got nothing but love for you. I'm like, where is this continuing the pattern of her just going off at him and then him just being so lovely in response?
Yeah, well, I do want to talk about Zumba in this vote. Obviously, you know, Tyson and Kieran are both immune this time. So, you know, as the other part of the Vuna 3, then they have to go for Wilder. But I do think that there's, yeah, no love lost there between these two sides. And they will take some pretty key people going away from each for it to become more fluid between those two sides. Otherwise, we might see it like really these swing votes deciding it. But let's go back to Amy, because I can't say enough about how well I really, really did enjoy her in this episode. As we said, you know, get Sean to sign his own death warrant, has to make some tough decisions about who will get sacrificed. We assume the flip is coming next episode, but she doesn't really have control over that. Like, more people might need to be sacrificed. You know, she's saying that she wants to keep, like, Rhaenyra and Smash and herself obviously safe. They might have to sacrifice Nicole at a point. Like, she's making those decisions. But I just love the way that she's putting in so much work. She's talking to Santini and Inesu, and she's instructing Zumba on what they have to do to placate Santini, telling Smash to go make up with Santini, which might have saved him. Like, she absolutely just took it in hand. There's actually a moment where she's like, oh, if Inesu has flipped, we are screwed. And then she's just like, all right, goes to work, makes the sacrifice of Sean. And I would agree that this, to me, was a win for OG Zumba. And in that way, like, I see her as the ultimate winner here.
I mean, it's losing the battle and winning the war, yeah. Right? Hopefully, of like, let's cut our losses here. Sean is someone that maybe seems like a no work clause in our contract we're trying to offer to Santini at this point. So I guess it has to happen. And yeah, this was sort of like a welcome back party for Amy in terms of an edit as well. I feel like not since the bungled camp raid stuff back in episodes 3 and 4, I feel like she's kind of disappeared since then. And I feel like, you know, you could tell a lot about a Survivor player with how they behave and strategize when their back is against the wall. And I agree. I give a lot of props to Amy for how she was able to handle it. Even just the conversation she had with Inesu, where Inesu brutally honest to her, right? Basically says like, hey, you're selling me something good, but I can't work with you right now. Amy takes it on the chin, doesn't, you know, I could see many other people be like, all right, that's it. Inesu's gotta go. You know, I could see a massive fall. Exactly. Yeah. No.
That's your Santini impression.
I'm not going to go full, you know, comparing Santini to a certain US/Australian Survivor player. But I think that, you know, certain people might say, OK, we got to burn Inesu now because she doesn't want to work with me. But I think Amy is able to empathize and sympathize with Inesu's position to, like, I think really digest what she was saying and say, OK, I can understand that the present situation is not great, but the future's looking bright. Let me try to do things. I mean, she does make attempts, right? She's the one who approaches Anella and says, like, look, you got to make good with Santini. Maybe this is a latch ditch effort to bring her over to your side. I can imagine. I can't remember if she was part of the reason why Sean ends up making that olive branch to Santini as well, which, as she alludes to in her voting confessional, if it had happened a couple of hours earlier, we could be talking a Warda boot here instead of a Sean one, which is, again, pretty ridiculous. But I think Amy did a really great job of digesting that information and then sort of packaging it into helping this block move forward. Yes, they are missing one, but they could be potentially gaining 3 instead, and a net gain of 2 in the game of Survivor and the post-merge is pretty damn good.
I have to agree. I think Amy and Inesu were both just masterful in this episode. I mean, that conversation with them was so interesting and fascinating. They were both, you know, giving each other so much information. I think Amy obviously gave the information about the idol clue, and then Inesu gave the information about Sean going home. So it was really a give and take sort of relationship. And then you can contrast that with Inesu's relationship with Tyson. Wait, in the secret scene, Tyson says, I only want Inesu to be giving me information. I don't want to give her information. And we saw that in the episode where Tyson doesn't tell her about the Emiria, and that could be the thing that flips her. So it was a really interesting contrast, and I think so well played by Amy and Inesu.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that? Because now we have a really big sense as to what the Vuna sort of structure is. It really does seem like
everyone has that Kieran sense. Every person and their mother knows the Vuna structure, exactly. It seems. Yes.
Kieran, Tyson, and Warda, like, I don't know what happened on Threeba, but, like, man, they really solidified something.
They went through something. That three
being,
is like...
being so loyal to each other that they're just, like, sharing immunity all between each other. I am not entirely sure what they're doing here.
Yeah.
Being
it's not looking
so
good.
So upfront, so visible. Tyson in particular. And we, you know, again, I made this comparison a couple weeks ago, but like I'm feeling so much Dominic Abate from Tyson in that it seems like his approach is maybe a little colder, a little more calculated. He is making these big ballsy moves, which are absolutely fantastic to watch. But I do feel like he is not necessarily the best at making everyone feel comfortable so that they don't necessarily feel like expendable to Tyson. Because I think Inesu certainly feels expendable to Tyson at this moment when starting off, it seemed like they actually had a pretty damn good bond.
I thought it was so weird for them not to tell Inesu about the clue. I mean, it's information that most people in the game are going to know. It's going to get to her eventually. It may as well come from you. You may as well get that credit for yourself. So yeah, I agree. I think Tyson has made a lot of flashy moves and I would have given him 3 chizzy points last week, but I think he's in trouble going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm not going to lie. At first, when Inesu was telling us that she doesn't feel kind of comforted by Vuna, I'm like, no, Inesu, like, don't you understand? Like, you're the double agent. They're doing the best they can. This is how it's meant to be. Like, don't get pulled in by it. But then as they continuously told me the Vuna 3, that it's very much them 3, I'm like, oh, she's right. Like, all of her feelings are correct on this. And then, as you said, Jay, that secret scene with Tyson was so pivotal to me. He's like, I only trust the 3 of us. I only talk to Chappies about strategy in a group. I only talk to Inesu and Santini about strategy when they're giving me information. I'm like, okay, but they know that. Like, they're picking up on it.
Yes.
And Wirda tells us at Immunity Island, like, it's us 3. And the thing is, as well, is, like, they have, like, some stuff in consolidating that 3, I think, is necessary. Like, when we talk about, you know, one of them going to Immunity Island, like, sending Wirda, like, the stakes are so high there. Then she gives a necklace back to Typhon. You're like, okay, that seems, like, pretty natural. Like, to me, I could kind of get that.
I don't know if that was necessary.
I mean, I think he just gave it to
Santini's,
her.
I mean, but Santini wants it. Like, it would be transparent, but, like, she's openly saying she wants it. I think Mike's right. There was a potential that she could have flipped right there if she wasn't given the immunity necklace. So I think it had to go to Santini. It was just like the easy Wendell move to make with no downside.
I agree that I think I could understand why Wirda does what she does. Again, I think she feels very comfortable and I do think she is fiercely loyal. I think that's why Amy says, you know, I we want to vote for Wirda because she'll probably never work with us. And I do think she wants to genuinely repay him. Santini could be an option. I think the downside with Santini is we have said in the past that I think when it comes to being a flipper, sometimes when you have that necklace around your neck, it emboldens you to do so because you're like, oh, well, it's not going to blow back on me whatsoever.
Like,
I'm completely
right at the end, like as she's getting it like in tribal council, not compared to like winning it at a challenge would be a slightly different dynamic, surely.
But I
who knows
what's on
me? I don't even know anymore.
Why does Wirda not give the necklace to Inesu?
Well, that stage Inesu was still
that,
a double.
That also would have been better.
Yeah, I feel like even with Inesu, like that's another thing. It seemed like they had a super tight relationship. I think what I'm confused about is like, when did Inesu get out of the inner circle? Is it just because she didn't go to that, you know, she didn't vote at that tribal council where Tyson plays his idol? She wasn't on Threba. Is it just because she's been absent all this time that they're like, we can't trust her anymore?
I think it was just that extra time on Threba and it didn't have anything to do with the vote of the last tribal. I think that was probably planned.
Well, they just, you know, it's not about that. I think that there's something really interesting here about double agents. Like, it happens with Cochran in SOPA, right? They're like, go be a double agent. And then he, like, actually flips. And they're like, too much, you know? So I think that there's, like, something here that's really interesting about that. And with Inesu, it is a little bit dangerous. Like, I can't believe as well, like, how did it fracture with Wirda? We've sort of seen them as, like, a key two from the beginning. But she hasn't voted with them since Pinty, right? Because she's out of the Teresa thing. Like, she ditched that. And Tyson and Kieran went through it with that vote, right? And Wirda's been through it in her own way. They reconnected Threba for the first bit of a teensy bit of control that any of them have had in the game. And then they make this move happen. And I think, like, it's probably, like, a self-fulfilling prophecy where, like, Inesu then can't talk to them as much as the merge, but they've been too disparate in the pre-merge and, like, situations happen. And then they kind of just consolidate this Vuna 3. And she's picked up on it. And she is right in that. And the thing with the Vuna 3 that's really difficult is, like, they're giving quite a bit. You know, they obviously give the vote to Santini to do whatever she wants in that. Like, there's some stuff there, but they need a lot more than what the Vuna 3 are giving. And some of that is irrational because, again, Santini needs, like, the most inclusion ever, and that's a tough one. But also, some of it is really rational because this hierarchy has become so clear. And I think that it's a massive failing on Kieran and Tyson, these two great players that we've spoken about over and over again, that they've made the hierarchy as clear as it is.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why. Maybe it's just because things flip so quickly, right? That they almost like went from the bottom to the top from a pure optics perspective, that they can't help but come across as tight as they are. But, you know, I'm trying to also figure out, you know, Kieran winning immunity, what's the balance of help versus hurt in that regard? Because help, obviously, we'll get into the whole, you know, revelation about there now being essentially the next idol is on Immunity Island. You want the ability to control that. And that's why I think Immunity Island's super cool in the post-merge is, look, not to besmirch the challenge department, but I do feel like unless someone saves their ass by winning immunity, immunity challenges usually don't mean that much when it comes to the storytelling of Survivor. This one did. This felt one of the most intense memory games that we've seen on the show, right? Because again, if this was Vuna versus Zomba, and both sides, because of Santini, knew there was an idol on Immunity Island, it's essentially a race to get there. And so it really was like, okay, the immunity winner really matters here, and it will continue to matter because they'll know being in control of to send someone to Immunity Island and therefore control who might have access to advantages. So I can understand why Kieran went for it. I know that it came down to like Kieran and Inesu at the end, but also like Anella and Tyson were in it. So I can understand why someone like Kieran would want to hang in there as long as Anella was. I mean, do you think there is something to trying to throw it to Inesu when you know it's just the two of you, and to be like, let me take the target off my back, let me try to have her engender some trust a little bit? Or could this come down to the fact that they still don't trust Inesu for whatever reason and are afraid she might send a Zomba if she wins immunity?
I think they should, Kieran should still try and win this. He wants, you know, there still is that little bit of distrust with Inesu. He wants to be able to control who goes. As you said, there's so much at stake. There's now potentially two immunities and an immunity idol, and also a potential advantage if you play the game. It's just a ridiculous amount for the next person that goes there. So I think he wants to be able to control that. And I think there's also a chance maybe that Inesu doesn't come back because she's a very individual player and she might want to get that immunity for herself and also have a chance at the idol and to play the game and get that advantage.
Yeah, I mean, she literally didn't come back last time. And it's something we spoke about. I was like, if I was Inesu, I'd say, why didn't you play for Immunity Island? Like, we're all in a really bad situation. But like, they probably could have used her in that vote, right? Like, they went through it with the Teresa vote. And they, like, only off their own extreme power with Kieran controlling it and Tyson playing the idol, barely scraped by to get through that vote, the two of them. So like, maybe they feel a little bit burned by that. And maybe they don't want to send her back to it when she has ditched in the past. Like, I think the thing with this season is that it necessitates so many strategic decisions for you and your allies. So if you really do only have trust with that three, and it, again, she can or egg on this one, and I have to say that with Inesu, so, like, I guess pun intended, but, like, she is departing from them in a way. Is it because they're not pulling her in with trust? Is it because she was anyway, so they're right not to trust her? Like, is it a self-fulfilling prophecy? I don't know. But, like, they're right that they can't really send her. Like, she isn't a part of them. Whether they've made it so or she's departed or whatever it was, it probably was a bit more on them. Whatever it was, she's not really with them. And there are so many strategic decisions in this season that make that hierarchy and that trust so clear. And if you have that trust, you have to use it, but now we're just so sure of it. I mean, like, look at the last two episodes alone. They have, relented on Santini's decision and given an immunity to Chappies so that he would be saved last time. You'd think that would be like, we're Vuna strong. That's not part of our three. We save Chappies. But also, so many other decisions just between the three, for Kieran to send Tyson and then to send Warda, and they bequeath to each other. Like, it's pretty clear that they're consolidating a three, even as they do give a little bit to the outsiders. So I think that it's really, really hard at that point to strike a balance of maintaining control and trust with so many strategic decisions and not making people feel excluded, just because you have to make these really public decisions all the time in this season.
But then that comes back to what you do with information, right? Which comes back to Jason's point about treating Inesu back at camp and specifically not telling her apparently about what happened at the reward. For all we know, you know, the scene that we're talking about, I think, is Amy tells Inesu, right, about the idol clue. And she's like, oh, I wasn't told that. We don't know if she's lying or if they actually did. The scene that we see is that they tell Kieran, I believe, right? And Warda,
yeah,
Tyson,
and Tyson tell Kieran.
Yeah, and Santini was there as well, right? So it's basically everyone but Kieran and Inesu were at the reward. We see them tell Kieran, if they really did neglect to tell Inesu,
that's the baffling one. That I can't understand.
I feel like we would have seen that if they did tell her, because we specifically saw them tell Kieran, and it was more important to the story whether they told Inesu. So I feel like the editors would have shown that.
Unless Kieran won immunity, they felt like because that was part of his decision making, that's why he did it. That would be the only reason why they would show one or not the other. But still, then it brings to the question. Yeah. Why did they not? Because that's a key example. That's something Inesu can point to and say, why are they neglecting to tell me this? This means they don't trust me.
Yeah, I have no idea why they didn't tell her.
Yeah, that's the one that's like an unforced error from Vuna. Like, that's the one where everyone knows it. It's so easy to gain trust. Like, we're telling you this secret thing that's not really secret. Like, it's basically a public clue at this point. And also, it only really has power if you win immunity, go to Immunity Island. Like, it's such an easy give, and they just don't, and I can't understand it.
They surely perceive that Inesu is with them rather than Zamba, so like they want to increase their chances of getting the idols. If Inesu gets sent there, they want her to be able to get the idol, otherwise it'll just be left there the next time for Zamba. And next time, I mean, the stakes in the immunity challenge are going to be huge, because there's four OG Zambas, and the winner is going to get three immunities, so it's going to be like a 50-50 with the idol, but you know, if they play correctly.
Yeah, because one person will win immunity, and then if they send someone to stay, they'll be immune, and then they'll get the idol. So that'll be a lot, because the alliances are only like basically 3-3 and 4 at this point. Like, whatever contingent wins could pretty much be almost fully immune.
Yeah, and we'll also talk about what's happening next week too, because that's also going to throw a bit of a spanner into the works and might help or hurt the sort of two sides plus one party in the middle as well. I mean, you would also think if you were the three Vunas too, plus I guess Chappies and Santini, that if your worry is that Inesu, you know, might be a double agent, we might not trust her. There were Zambas at this reward as well, and you would imagine they're also going to tell
everyone will know. Right? Like
everyone but Inesu will know.
Yeah, so it's like beat them to the punch, right? Show that, okay, we're loyal to you before they are. You're the first person we go to and tell this information.
Yeah, this whole episode is on its head in really funny ways. The fact that we're coming out here and just like criticizing what Vuna did, like they did win the vote, and we're like criticizing it as if they lost it, but like what did they really gain? They didn't get out the target that they wanted. They got out probably a peripheral member of Zamba. They didn't get out the core member. They probably have lost some allies. Some people have flipped and they probably don't realize it, so now they're kind of getting snowed themselves. I mean, I guess, yeah, the history books will rewrite it differently. Wikipedia will tell a different story of this vote than we know it to be, because I definitely see this as a Zamba win. And I also find it hilarious that Inesu is now like a flip double agent. Like last episode, she voted with Zamba, but was really with Vuna. And I feel like this episode, she voted with Vuna, but was really with Zamba. And it's like she hasn't voted since the Pinty vote. So it's very all the way around. But I think there's some like really interesting theory here around double agents in general, spies in general, and how you like make people feel included when they're not meant to be with you, because I guess we don't see the day-to-day of like conversations and plans and like, you know, the victory. Like, as much as Santini was mad at being, you know, everyone being upset with her, she got to be part of that. Like, and people have said on social media, Vuna have said they knew they were part of something special last week. And Inesu can't come back and celebrate that and be part of that. Like, she's still a double agent. She tells Tyson, she's like, I'm keen for this to end. And they're not really including her in that, and she can't be in Wave. And they're not doing a good enough job of that on the side. And I feel like that emotionally probably speaks to it a little bit, and like the danger of putting these double agents out there to be like a Patty Hearst, who was kidnapped, not a double agent, but like that's the only Stockholm Syndrome example that I have, and they get like lost in the fields, and now they're like actually against you.
So is Inesu robbing the bank of the Vunas right now?
Yeah, like I feel like that's what's happening. Like, they don't even realize that next episode she's gonna come out with a mask on and she's gonna pull it down. They're gonna be like, Inesu, is that you? And she's like, yeah, I flipped. Okay, I flipped back. I was a spy for them. I was a spy for you. Now I was a spy for them, and now I'm just with them. And like that's what happened.
Yeah.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale. Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Can we also just take a moment? I feel like we should do this like every episode in the post-merge now. It's just like, take a moment to remember how awesome that merge vote was.
Man,
that was so cool. That was really fun.
It's true. And it's
up there with the heroes versus villains vote.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I think that there's something about the fallout of that, and there's something about the fact that neither Santini or Inesio are happy with their roles in that. You know, like, Tyson gets to come back and be the hero who did this, and, like, Chappies is like, bam, you know, we got it done. There's, like, a real victory about it. And Santini can't enjoy it because everyone's yelling at her, and Inesio can't enjoy it because she lost, technically, and there's something in that that just made them both pretty unhappy. And I think we just have to look at Vuna and be like, when are you going to realize this? And when are you going to realize that people know that you're, as much as you keep telling us, I only trust the three, we're such a tight three, it's like, yeah, we get it, and everyone gets it. And how do you not get that everyone gets it? And I'm concerned for them because I do think they're really good players, and that we've, like, really praised Kieran and Tyson, and this was, like, as much as they won this vote, it was like, I'm really not looking forward to part two for you guys.
I think that's why, as you said, it's so hard to pull off that double agent move, which made last week's vote even more impressive. I don't know when else in Survivor history it's actually worked to use a double agent like that. Maybe Ben, but that was also quite short-lived. So it was really impressive. But now this week, as you said, they've made those power structures so clear. I mean, one thing that caught me is Wada's comments at Tribal Council. Mm. She seemed to be throwing shade towards Sanity. I'm not sure that the edit was portraying it that way. So it was just like, again, this is another example of you alienating those people in the middle, and why I think I'm pretty confident that OG Zomba is going to win the next vote.
I had the same question. You're
alluding to Warda talks about how she chastises people who have been talking outside of their trusted circles, which makes them look bad. And the camera cuts to Sanity to this is who they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I thought maybe that, like, she was talking about Sean, like, benefit of the doubt, like, he's a chaotic player and he's about to go home. But I was like, yeah, there's no way Santini's not going to think this is about her, because she's, like, chaos personified. Like, whether you mean it or not, this sounds like a Santini thing, right? And that sounds like, I mean, just why be that vocal? Like, you're kind of, like, in this...
giving away a lot of information.
Yeah, like, it's a tenuous position
anyway.
But
this is Warda. This is someone who is arguing with the person that was safe in Immunity Island for two tribal councils in a row.
Arguing with Nico this week.
Yeah, I thought Nico was funny and, like, a secret
scene. That's why we love Warda. It's because, like, she... Let's talk about someone who doesn't have a filter as soon as they put their torches in the slot at tribal council. Like, I absolutely love it. It's a little baffling, but I love when the truth comes out. It's just been so interesting to me that last week, we chastise, deservedly so, and Sean even talked about it this week in my exit interview with him, just like how complacent and transparent the Zombas were.
Oh my God,
now
the trio are doing the exact same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
My God, when you beat them, you join them, I guess. Like, yeah, they're falling prey to, like, all the same pitfalls. And I think with Wyatt, like, does Wyatt think that people don't remember, like, what is said at tribal council? Like, I don't know. Maybe it was a Sean thing, but I agree. Like, you guys just be happy with the numbers that you have right now. Just placate the people who are on the outs as best as you can, and then just, like, don't talk, and we'll all get through this together. It's, like, way too hard a position right now, I think, to just be, like, talking too much. And Nico as well. Nico in the secret scene was funny. That was, like, he was giving, like, Nicole a little bit of a pep talk at Tribal Council. She's, like, saying how upset she's losing Marisha. He's like, hey, you know, you still have yourself, and, like, you're gonna be okay, right? Like, I don't know. I thought Nico was really funny in this episode. We also got, like, a little Twitter scene of him DJing with the discs.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, he's having fun with it. But I agree. Like, Vuna, this was, like, one of the worst episodes I've seen of Vuna, and they won. So I think we've really, like, beat that drum.
They also didn't get the idol. I mean, that's something that, which is something that could come back to bite them. I mean, obviously, like, Wada kind of has to give up and go in this scenario because it's 6-5. But if they had been, like, the Davids and they'd shared all their information, and then they may have known about Inesio's advantage, and they could have used Inesio's advantage and still lost Wada's vote and then won the vote, because Inesu can go and remove someone from the opposing alliance. And then they'll still win the vote 5-4 and they can go and get the idol. And then next week there's going to be no issues. But because they don't have that flow of information, Tyson's not giving Inesu anything. They don't trust Inesu. I mean, maybe it's fan fiction, but in an alternative reality, they're all sharing information like the Davids, and then they win this vote with the idol and, you know, without having to sacrifice anything, really.
No, that's a great point, that despite the clearing of the board with advantages last week, the one sole remainder was Inesu's tribal council pass. And it seems like my assumption, at least, is literally nobody knows about it except for her.
Yeah, I think so.
And I wonder, could that be a reason? Why do they feel like, you know, does Tyson assume that she's untrustworthy, that she's withholding information because she is? Does she feel like she can't divulge information because she doesn't feel as trusted? You know, maybe that sort of is a reason why both of these parties are feeling distant from one another.
Yeah, it's again the chicken or the egg on this, because what did she say to them when she came back from Immunity Island? What did she tell them she had won or lost? Obviously, she had stayed and played, and it doesn't seem like any of them know that. So maybe that is a reason that they started to distrust her, and maybe she is responsible for that. And now she's obviously having to make other plans, but it's possible she's like at the genesis of that fracture. I just think, as you're saying, it's not as unified clearly as the Davids were, but for a team that pulled off a move like they did last week, it's absolutely not at that point. And yeah, it might sound like fan fiction, Jan. I hadn't thought about that in terms of her advantage, but like, once upon a time, Wyrda and Inesu were the two, right? So if just them two are talking and Wyrda goes there, she can stay and play, maybe get something for them, get an idol for them too, and know that Inesu has that power. But there's just been such a fracture there, and I do have to kind of put it on that pair and be like, how has that happened? So definitely something has happened here with the Patty Hearst that is Inesu, and it is troubling, and I'm concerned about that as well for Vuna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also love that Jason's saying, like, okay, they should have came together like the Davids and, you know, pulled their advantages, when the Davids also immediately turned on each other at the final nine. So, like, they're Davids no matter what here.
That's true, I guess.
Yeah, so you can't pull your advantages together for more than one vote.
Yeah. How high, like, why can't we, like, ride the high of victory for longer than like a day and just
get bored?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but that's the weird thing, though, is because, like, again, here they were victorious. They were, but you know, they like, end up getting Inesu and Santini to vote with them. I mean, again, I think the Sean vote out is best for Santini, because, again, he seemed to be the one that was really going after her. I think, as I talked about last week, I thought Smash was going to be like the consensus pick, and he probably was going to be. We're not for Santini putting her foot down. But I think on the note of what Jason brought up, we should talk about that idol clue, right? Because that is now the not only the elephant, like the entire savannah in the room of what's coming on Immunity Island.
Yeah, I just love it from a production point of view to hide an idol on Immunity Island, because it incentivizes one person to tell another person about the idol. You know, even if only one person had found that clue, they have to tell someone else about it in order for them to send that person to Immunity Island. So it's like the half idol where you have to kind of share that information with another person. We all, you know, whenever we look at idols and people just hold them and never tell anyone and they just play to the final five, it's always really boring. What we like about idols is people sharing that information and using it to influence the social dynamics. So this basically forced that sort of social interaction.
Yeah, and you can tell one person, but best to tell many, right? Because then if you're the one telling, I'm only telling you, and if you win immunity, send me, and then hopefully, you get to go find it, and you kind of maximize your odds the more people you tell, the more, like, better at immunity people that you tell. I enjoy it than them putting it on Immunity Island, because I think that people once asked, will anyone ever give up and go? Now they give up and go so much that I don't know if you noticed, but the stay and spray... like, technique block had is actually gone now, because they never stay anymore.
Well, I thought it was because it was eliminated from the Branchler.
Yeah, I also was like, it's one of those two things. They're definitely listening. But I do think that it makes the stakes even higher to stay. There's a lot there, but your vote has never been more important in this, like, really contentious merge. And makes it, like, a really, really interesting decision for us to discuss every week, which I really, really enjoy. And we definitely got some questions about, like, shouldn't they be able to look for the idol anyway? Like, why are they putting it behind this kind of paywall where you have to stay and play?
And it's like, go to the toilet and go to the toilet.
Yeah, guys, yeah, well, I'm going to give up and go, but can I just have a second to just go, like, pee in the bush? And then you're like, no. No, like, obviously they have to put it behind that wall because you're giving up and going. Like, you leave. You don't get to just, like, look around. Like, you know, you didn't stay. You don't get to hang out there. And if you stay, you get time there. You get to look. It makes perfect sense to me. And the stakes have never been higher to win immunity, to go to Immunity Island, to make these really difficult decisions where, completely agree, Wirda had to do it. They needed her vote. She almost went home in this situation. Like, it was a fraught decision to make, but it was, like, a necessary decision. And I love that they're making the stakes so high on that. And I also love that they're diversifying the immunity challenges for something like Memory here, where if immunity is going to be that important, you best not do it like a really physical challenge every single time. Make it really, really diverse competitions that Kieran will win every single one of them.
Exactly. It's a jack of all trades. I totally co-sign everything that both of you said. My one sticking point is that I don't love that you have to stay and play to get it. Not just because of
how?
Like the
what
well,
do you think
be able
just
to do it.
Give up and go and look around the
That's
island.
That's the whole trade-off.
No.
Yeah.
Well, it's because I don't like that you have the possibility of getting an advantage and then you get an idol as well. That's verging a little too much into like Santini episode 2 territory for me. If the advantages are more so of the camp raid variety of more innocuous, less advantagey advantages, then I'm more fine with it. But if it's like I go to Immunity Island and now I get a vote steal and an idol, it feels a little too OP for me, even at this point in the game.
But it's advantages that everyone knows about, which inherently decreases their value. I mean, like, for example, when Steven and Spencer both jump in the water and everyone knows about that advantage that's Steven gets, it basically puts a target on his back and everyone wants him out. So the fact that everyone knows about it really just diminishes their value.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, like, everyone knows because Santini told them all to look for the clue. But also, yeah, I mean, I think going to Immunity Island, like, we've talked about the stakes, we've talked about the trade-off, which used to be, like, vote for immunity, and now is becoming, you know, the cons of going to Immunity Island are now, like, your relationships are so transparent and you're all part of the vote. This is not tribe to tribe. So that's like a big thing as well. Like, that's another really big con at this merge. You make yourself a big threat. You make the people sending you a big threat. Like, there's a lot of really bad things about this, about going to Immunity Island. And then you make the decision. If you stay, then you might get all the, you know, these really high stakes because the stakes are high. Like, they should be raised because I think that, like, it's becoming more and more dangerous to go and the decision is becoming more and more volatile and more scary. So I don't mind them raising the stakes in this way. And, like, let's dangle the carrot as much as we can and see if we can convince people away from, like, betraying their allies when numbers are really difficult. And let's just make the stakes as high as possible.
Yeah, like, your vote has never meant more, and also going to Immunity Island has never meant more.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
What I do like is actually the way that Santini goes about getting everyone to find the clue. Again, maddening from player perspective. As Tyson says, the stupidest thing you can do. Santini even admits to that.
I think Tyson's just done with Santini and I.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you not have four idols?
Yeah, how does Santini still not have an idol in her hand? I have to ask on this podcast.
Well, it's weird, though, because he's good luck, though. She's good luck, though, for him, right? Like, he's pissed off at her, but at the same time, she's the reason why he got two idols and possibly a third. He might get one next episode.
Yeah, she's a Steven Fishback of idols. The way that, like, Steven's best friends always win Survivor. If you're near Santini, you will find an idol. Now, she won't get the idol. Unfortunately, she and Chappies were right next to the idol, and obviously they had a 4-2 Vuna majority on that reward, so, like, the odds were really great. What you don't want to do is, like, flatten those odds by being like, open season, everyone look, and then Rania gets it. Like, no.
I wonder if that clue last week was the same clue as in the clue in the...
I think so. I can imagine the room.
I would definitely think so. I think that, especially... I don't know, actually, because I don't know if they want three idols in the game at once. You know, that might be a little too game breaky, but I would imagine so just from Occam's Razor. I mean, what I like about it, though, is it really harkens back to me to like some of the OG days of the Hidden Immunity Idol when like Jeff Probst reads a clue out to everybody. Right. And then provides this mad treasure hunt about it. While there is fun that comes to exclusivity of information and who you share with it, again, information is currency in the game. I do like sometimes when we essentially get, you know, the Survivor version of that cash booth where money's flying at you in a wind tunnel. Right. Where it's just a landfall of information. And it's like, OK, you know something, but also your opponent knows something. what are you going to do about that? I think it created a really fascinating standoff that, again, really translated into the immunity challenge of like, okay, now both sides know about this immunity idol. I think that leads to much more tense television than, okay, if Centony or Chappie's found the clue, they share it with the rest of the Vunas, and it's like, okay, well, they know something that the Zambas don't know.
Yeah, because, you know, usually during immunity challenges, I'm quite bored because there's often not a lot riding on it. But now there's just so much riding on it. There's so much stakes to each immunity challenge that it's just, you know, so interesting. And I agree. I love the public idols and public clues. It's always created really interesting moments in Survivor history. I mean, a couple of examples that spring to mind are in Cagayan, where everyone's looking for the clue, and you have Spencer and Wu dashing
hashtag
through the jungle.
Yeah.
You know, when Randy finds the idol in front of everyone in Gabon and then has to dispose of it. I mean, it's always created some really interesting moments that I wish it happened more often.
Yeah, I mean, I think this one, the fact that it was an immunity island prevented what would have been... Imagine if it had been like, the idol is under the flag at camp. They would have just got back and they just would have seen Rania just like elbowing Chappies in the face.
Yeah, they would have said, can we give up and go this reward? Yeah. Like, can we just not eat the pizza and go to camp right now?
Yeah, this cast definitely would. So I definitely feel like that's what was prevented, is just them like getting back to camp and the rest of the people being like, what's going on? As they all like dive on and everyone's just digging. Like, that's definitely what we would have got. Also, a couple of hilarious things from this. Is that Rhaenyra is like, I feel because I found it, will people send me to Immunity Island? And they're all like,
dumb again.
Yeah, like, absolutely not in any capacity, Rhaenyra, are we doing that? And also, I feel for me, every time that the edit closes up on the clue, especially last week, they did it so many times and they didn't find it. For me, from LaRue, this is like really passive aggressive. Like, guys, do we need to tell you again that it's here? If they hadn't found it now, I think LaRue might have just come in next time onto camera and been like, here you go. I'm throwing it. Whoever gets it first, my God, we could not have made it.
No, and that's why. No, I think that should be the punishment, though. Like, you place it in three rewards. If they don't find it by then Nickel reads it aloud to everybody. Yeah. That's what happens.
You don't
deserve the privacy of getting the clue. Everyone knows about it now.
Pretty bad.
We need the Russell Swan like clue highlighting.
Yeah, well, that's what they've been doing, but just like over and over again, and they didn't find it. And this time they're like, it's here still. No, this was really fun. It was like Santini and Idols. I think they're her kryptonite. Like, I truly believe, I don't know what happens to her around that they like rewire her system every time she's near one, like near a clue or an idol in any way, where she's like, I can't hold on to this for more of an episode. It's important to me that when they get on the podcast after this episode, they can't say Santini has an idol in her possession. I just want to get on one podcast this season through all the idol stuff that Santini's had and say she has it in her hands or her bag or on her person. I just want to say that is true. Unfortunately, that won't be like a monkey's paw thing where like she goes home with it, like finds it in the episode, goes home. I'm like, well, it's on her person. Oh my God, I think I just put that in the universe.
There were a lot of really fun editing moments from this episode. Again, I would say this was more of a chess pieces episode if we're using a piece of parlance from script to TV, but there was a couple of really fun storytelling moments. First, I mean, let's talk about all this Santini stuff. Remember when she sat out the reward challenge and she's looking under the sit-out bench for the clue? Like, just a fantastic contrast to when she sits there and says, all right, obviously, you know, it wasn't under the sit-out bench, so let's just be up in front about it, everybody. Come on, communal clue gathering. But what I really liked was, I was trying to remember, I think it was the conversation where they were talking about, getting rid of Sean when they were talking about, you know, I think it was Amy talking to Sean about what's happening, and it cut to them trying to track down the rooster, right, to get rid of it. Like,
oh,
that
I didn't
was a
enjoy
real,
that.
Well, from a PETA perspective, otherwise, I think it was a very, we rarely get that. And the B-roll nature stuff back in the day, I feel like they actually took a lot of work to like try to create symbology of the animal kingdom through what the players are doing in the game. And we got that rare thing here where like, camp life matches up with what's going on strategically of them attempting to track down this rooster and kill it while essentially they're offering up their own sacrifice on the other side of the beach.
And especially for Sean, of all people, who had to go home in the episode they killed the chicken, when he said he really didn't want that, you know, he was going to free all the chickens, and he gets sacrificed much like a chicken.
Yeah, how is Santini's story going to end with these idols? I mean, it's been such a huge part of her story. Is she going to be idled out? Is she going to be saved by an idol? Is she going to be idled out by an idol that she should have gotten?
I don't know. I mean, look, at the end of the day, Survivor South Africa just, like, is transparent with the editing, and, like, she just has been chaotic with the idols. Like, nothing might come of it, but it's just every single time that something happens with her and the idols, I can't with it. And this was another really fun one. It's just sad when you like look at the table, like she was right next to it. She's the one who would have got it. She was the closest person to it in terms of where she sat down.
Yeah.
Oh, and let me clarify. Yeah. So it was when Amy and Inesu were talking, essentially that was Inesu confirming to Amy, right, that like, I can't vote with you this time. Sean has to go. And that was contrasted with Sean himself having to corner this poor rooster, not knowing that he himself was the rooster.
It's so sad. I mean, I want to talk more about like where these, you know, I guess winning Zumbas are. I mean, Sean doesn't win, obviously. Like, he's the Zumba who loses out here. And again, I have to credit Amy, because Sean even says in his exit, and he tells us like his plan is to try and put all the votes on Santini, which is something I don't really think could happen at this point. And he was going to go like Chaos Sean, he said in his exit, to do that, right? Like, just try and get one person over. And Amy's the one who's like, for the good of the Alliance, let's keep her on site. And he goes quietly into his own death because she sends him there and because she gets him on board with a plan that is better for Oshii Zumba, just not better for him. And again, I find that really, really lethal, because he is doing a lot of the chaos earlier on in this episode, and she pivots him from like throwing Santini under the bus and being like fully on this vote, which is really bad for her, to going to Santini, hugging her, trying to make up with Santini, and putting in work to pull Santini back to Zumba that will pay dividends at a point where he's out of the game. So like the puppet strings that Amy was pulling this episode, which is unreal.
Yeah, Jason, give me your thoughts about Sean. I gotta admit, this was a weird way to lose him, considering how he started the season.
Yeah, I mean, Sean's been a really fun character at the start when he was, you know, having those blow ups at Tribal. And then he kind of showed himself to be a really good player as well last episode. I think you guys talked about the fact that he was the most perceptive about what was happening. He was the one who said they should have voted for Tyson to kind of scare him. And I think that was a good move. But then this week, I didn't really understand him targeting Santini at all. Like, she's the swing vote. As we've said, she's the one that they need to get on their side for at least the next couple of votes. But I think he was a great character, good casting. Everyone was good. Good casting this season.
I think he's just so desperate at that point that it's like, and I think he's very chaotic, that he thinks maybe like, if someone were to pitch this to him, like, just get rid of this headache of a person, like, you know, maybe he would flip. Like, they could say that he's like the Chappies, and like, obviously Santini and Chappies are the chaotic players, unfortunately. They're not going to flip on Santini. He's just hoping like, maybe Wider or someone who can just be like a little bit more volatile would just be like, enough of this. And they are talking about getting rid of Santini at a point. They just can't do it now. So I think he knows he's kind of cooked like the chicken and is just hoping for the best. Someone is just like, no more. But it was a dire plan, and definitely for OG Zumba, it was better for them to keep her on side. And he became a part of that. Like, it's actually just like a cool dynamic. I'm really loving the subterfuge of this episode. It's very much like delayed gratification, a very like complex strategy in this Cold War, but he becomes part of a plan that is going to help his old tribe, but like to his own sacrifice. Like, it's a dark episode, and I really enjoyed that.
Like, Amy was just like killing him silently. Like, she was having that conversation with him. She knew that he was going home just so that they didn't piss off Santini for a future vote. It was really quite brilliant.
Yeah, like, she's literally like patting him on the back, like, just go make up a Santini
on the way out the door.
And as she like has the knife in his back as she's doing it, completely lethal. I also thought, like, in terms of the rest of Zumba, Nicole and Rainier kind of just like a part of this from a group perspective. I guess the biggest question I can have about Rainier is like, how is he not the target? Because he's like pretty much the only Zumba name we haven't heard.
I mean, I think it goes back to, again, how he's being perceived, which I think, again, I'm going to keep assuming is completely different from how we're viewing him. Like, I think he really has mastered coming across as like a young, naive kid almost. That it seems like for whatever reason, there's always bigger fish to fry when it comes to Rainier, which is, again, so strange because it seemed like he does really have such a head for this game. It's weird because, you know, Graham really pumped this up last time on, which we ended up not seeing, right? The entire Chappie splaining part two of like, you're not really adaptable to Rainier. I'm sad we didn't see that because that would have been incredible again, especially to get Rainier's reaction. But maybe from that perspective, everyone just still underestimates him. Feels like there's always a day where we can get rid of Rainier, but Sean, Anella, even someone like Nicole, who has won individual immunity in the past, these are the bigger threats in the moment.
Yeah, I think they perceive Anella as the bigger threat because I think he's more connected to everyone. I think, as we've said, Anella has done an amazing job of basically playing dumb. I mean, like, that conversation with Chappies a few weeks ago was really interesting. The fact that he could say to Chappies that the physical game is 80% of the game. Obviously, Rainier doesn't believe that. And then this week again, I think he's able to get away with the fact that that he says that he wants the idol because they think, oh, he's just like an innocent young guy. He doesn't, it doesn't matter. Like if he's not a threat with the idol, but we know that Rhaenyra is like a super fan, knows the game so well and is a huge threat with the idol. So I think that's well played, Rhaenyra, but obviously they weren't going to let him get the idol.
So
wait. Is Rhaenyra trying to be the Fabio of the season?
Yeah, I mean, how are they buying this? Are we saying that Rhaenyra has been, like, has he been acting to be a different person this entire time? Because, like, I think everyone would tell you, like, he has, like, the most game body confessionals of everyone. Like, he's the most strategic. We perceived him as, like, very much a leader. But, like, in terms of the names we've heard, it was, like, the three girls. Then Sean's obviously gone. Smash was the other option. He's literally the only one of the other six to not be targeted. Is he just playing, like, a completely different human? And is he only able to do that because he has abs? Because I truly think, like, the fro, you know that he's a super fan. But then you look at his abs, you're like, maybe you're not. Maybe you are just, like, a guy who's here for challenges. He's like, oh, I found it. Does this mean I get the idol? And they're like, no, no, sweet cherub. No, no, that's not how it works. But it's nice that you tried. Like, is that what this is? Has he been acting to be a different human this whole time?
He injected the super serum right before going out there just for the purpose of playing dumb. That was it.
Yeah. No, guys, he's Frobio. That's what it is. We unlocked it.
Like, that would be a massive play. That he's, like, lying that his wife is pregnant. He's lying about who he is as a human being. He's acting dumb. Like, we can't understand. Like, we would assume if they're going for Zamba, he's the first target. Other than relationships with, like, Rhaenyra and Tyson, is it just that he's, like, the social physical player and he never discusses, like, strategy and he doesn't look like a smart super fan? Because have they seen his hair?
To me, top of the winner rankings are Nessu, Amy, and Rhaenyra. And maybe Karen after that.
Wait.
They're not targeting
him at
all.
Back to the hair, Shannon. Wait, are you to imply that, like, people who have big curly hair are can only be super fans? Has Jacob Derwin just ruined this for you?
I think it's like it's the Jufro, right? Like, I'm talking to two guys who probably, if lockdown continued long enough, would probably get there themselves. Like, it makes you look like a super fan. Like, when I first saw Rhaenyra's face in the preseason in, like, an ad, I was like, oh, this guy's a super fan. But then I saw his body. I was like, oh, maybe not. And that's what it is. That's what this is. That's what he's playing on, I think. That's the divide. But he's
should
like,
have shaved his hair
ripped.
Before going out there.
Yeah. Well,
no.
Well,
or
no,
he should have strained it because then it would have really been that Fabio, like, full-length look, right?
Oh, my God. He's pretending to be Fabio, and that's what it is. And he can because he can be like, I'm just here for the challenges. And they're like, look at you. Maybe you are. This is what it is. I'm telling you. It's like an ab blindness. That's what I think. Other people who don't have that, if he was scrawny, they'd be like, clearly you're a super fan. Why else are you here? But he's not scrawny, and that's what lets him hide behind it. And that's why I think that they're not looking at it. Like, they're saying Smash is the biggest threat. And I think Smash is a really big social threat, and they're like, he's really likable in the final tribal council as well. But, like, Smash, we know, like, hadn't seen a ton of Survivor beforehand. Like, I don't know, if you want, like, a strategic force out of the game, like, how have we not spoken about Rhaenyra? I just think, like, he's probably hiding behind it.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be, I think, something that comes out afterwards as to how he's being perceived. Because there's some sort of disconnect.
It's ab blindness,
going
Mike.
On.
That's a literal thing. It's a legitimate thing that I just created and it exists.
I'm going with Frobio personally, but I think we're sort of like Frobio. Two sides of the same coin at this point.
Yeah, I don't know how he's doing it. Like, that's the biggest thing, and that's what we said last week as well. Like, the best thing you can say about Rhaenyra in this loss is that he didn't go home. And, like, the best thing I can say about him here, where it felt like other Zamba members were taking the charge, namely Amy, it's like, the best thing I can say is, like, you weren't targeted at all. Like, how are you buying yourself this much time? Because, like, he'll do things with the time. He's a good player.
And he still has all those relationships. Like, Sean comes out of the game in his Ponderosa, says, I want to vote for Smash and Rhaenyra. So, you know, he's a huge threat going forward, and no one seems to realize it.
That's the weird thing, is that Rhaenyra hasn't, like, he has not had a good post-merge so far.
I mean, it's been two episodes.
Yeah, but even in the second episode where you give a lot of credit to Amy, like, Rhaenyra didn't really do much. So it does beg the question, like, does the guy who's arguably getting the best winner edit so far, is he going to have an inevitable moment where he comes forward? Is it going to be more of a thing that's sort of like what happened with Tommy, where, like, all the other bigger threats get taken out and then Rhaenyra's left in hand?
I've seen this.
Well, then Denny steals Kieran's thunder and ends up winning the final few immunity challenges. So that's,
maybe.
You know.
Oh my God, that would be hilarious.
There's lots of past the end for him.
Yeah, I mean, that would be pretty funny. If he, like, came in being like, I just care about the challenges, and then had to rely on challenges to get to the end, and then did win all the challenges, was like, wow, I guess the path was inside of me the whole time, and it became like a self-fulfilling prophecy. That would be hilarious to me.
And Chappies would be like, I taught you well. See,
yes, exactly.
I did it. I inspired you. Here's my vote.
Come back to Chappies and say, I told you the challenges were 80% of the game.
How is he going to convince them that he's actually the strategic player at the final tribal council? He's going to have to, like, shave his head or straighten his
hair.
The
hair is a super fan thing. He's going to have to, like, take off the Superman suit of abs.
Yeah.
I think he stands up. He's like, guys, first thing, my wife is pregnant. Been hiding that the whole time. Second thing. Here are all the second boots of every U.S. season of Survivor, all right? Because I've done second boots, so it's much harder than first. Here's the boot list of every season, and they just sit there for hours, and they're like, wow, this guy is a super fan. That's really impressive that he hit that as well.
Here are all the tribe names and tribe colors of every season.
Yes, we get Jordan Kalish out there, that's what it is. He's like, if I can win this week in Survivor history, will it prove to you that I'm a fan? And he sits
there. Give me a Survivor quiz. Ask me anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, isn't it like Nick voted for Christy because she voted out, because she referenced Danny Boatwright in her final tribal council speech? And he was like, Lee doesn't know who Danny Boatwright is. I must respect this. And he voted for her to win. So maybe he'll just be like, I'm going to name the most obscure Survivor that I can think of right now. And I know that you fans will know who I'm talking. That will get Kieran's vote.
Once upon a time, I thought I was going to be like Liliana Gomez of Survivor Fiji, booted unceremoniously when their tribe gave up immunity. But no, I persevered. They're like, oh my God, he strung a sentence together that I thought I'd never hear from a Survivor super fan.
Exactly. Wow. He's really doing a lot with the app blindness. I will keep saying it until we make it a thing. Rainier. Kind of just part of it at this point, but yeah. I guess
we should also, acting. Can we also mention the other person part of that teacher-student so-called pairing? Because, I mean, big episode and how small it was for Chappies. And we talked about this last week about how Chappies wasn't the merge boot. And I honestly do feel like there might be a path again where everyone maybe decides at a certain point, like, he's too much of a physical threat. Let's get rid of him. But maybe I'm jinxing it. I kind of feel like Chappies might be long for this game now that he made it past that vote, considering he went from getting the majority of votes last time and getting saved by an idol to not getting a vote this round is like just very much night and day.
Well, there's no real reason to take him out now for a couple of votes. Like those two warring factions are going to go for each other and he's just going to kind of skate by for a couple of votes. And we'll get to a point maybe at the final eight or final nine, kind of around the same time they're looking to take out Tantany, where they view him as a huge physical threat, especially since he can send someone to Immunity Island. I think they'll start going for him then. But I think maybe at final six or final seven, they'll start going for him and the next couple of votes, he'll be safe.
I don't know, because even when they start going for that middle faction and they maybe team up at a point, OG Vuna, like the Vuna contingent and Zamba, and be like, wait, get him, like the people in the middle who've been, you know, like, I think that then, like, Suntony will be, like, they're aching to get rid of Suntony, and that's what that point would have probably screwed over a lot of people. Like, he'll have shields in those women, which is kind of cool. We definitely saw, like, the least of him, I would say, in this episode, which is great, because we saw so much of him last episode, and it was concerning stuff, and now there was, like, no, you know, digging endlessly, and he was kind of quiet, and, like, let everyone else just kill each other, Chappie. He's like, great, definitely, because Suntony at some point was like, I think I'm just going to lay low. Cut to her just doing, like, a million other things, like, yelling at Kieran about the target. Like, Chappies actually did lay low, and it was good.
Yeah, do you think maybe he was in the spy nest the entire time? He's just like, let me just retire there. But it's exactly what he needed to do. Like, he, again, almost got voted out last time. He's just going to lay back. And again, I think it's what I said last week. He is one of the most transparent players left. And I do wonder if in this cast, they sort of write him off because of that, right? Of like, okay, well, we always know what Chappies is going to do. Chappies is going to be Chappies. The devil we know is better than the devil we don't. Let's go after some of these other unknown devils.
I think it's possible. Another person we haven't really spoken about, even though we almost went home, is Smash. And I thought Smash did well here. I thought one little move, again, like, it was directed by Amy. She's like, go make up with Suntony. So much credit. But then, like, when he goes to talk to Suntony, he's like, and you know Sean's been throwing your name out. And for, like, an emotional player like Suntony can be, I think that might have been, like, the nail in the coffin for this poor sacrifice that was Sean. The Sean sacrifice. Not, doesn't really work. But I will say that, like, I think that could be it.
I'll give it, like, a golf clap. I appreciate it.
Well, no, don't feel the need to do that. But I do think that, like, you know, you always say, Mike, you just have to be, when you're running from a lion, right? You just have to be faster than the person.
Yeah, you just gotta be, you don't have to be the fastest, just faster than one other person.
And that's what he was. He was faster than Sean, and he saved himself in ways, and he was saved in ways. And also the fact that Zumba felt he was indispensable. The fact that Amy does vouch for him and stuff when she's been with Sean and Smash the whole time, and she decides, like, you know, Inesu does tell her that, and Inesu does put out the sacrifice plan first, but the fact that everyone's having these relationships to be like, okay, we're protecting these people and Sean can be the collateral, that speaks to his relationship. So he has to be credited there.
Yeah, I thought he managed that conversation with Santhi really well. As you said, it was, you know, Amy directing him to go do it, but then he went there and he's, you know, rekindling that relationship with Santhi and think paving the way for her to flip at the very next vote. So all credit to him as well.
Yeah, it was a lot of apologies this episode. Like, people yelling at Santhi at the beginning and then coming, like, hat in hand, being like, hey, sorry about what I said. Don't vote me out. You know, like, that's what the whole episode was. Them just, like, trying to make up for those first 2 minutes of the episode.
Lots of truth-telling in this episode. Not a lot of lying, which is really interesting to see.
Yeah, and it was so much fun, though, because the emotions come out on Survivor, and that's what I love about Survivor. It's an inherently emotional game because you're deprived. And then they have to look at the numbers and be like, oh, crap, we need her.
Exactly.
They
come back and they're so mad. And, like, of course,
you need her, but don't want her.
Yeah, and then in the light of day, it's like, hey, Santhi, sorry about the stuff that I said. I don't think
it's the hangover, right? Like, oh, we both said things last night that we regret. We were under the influence. That tribal council just messes with your head. Maybe that's why Warda feels like nobody remembers stuff from tribal council.
Right. Yeah, I apologize for all the things that I said and for many more things that I thought. Today, let's put it behind us. That's what the whole thing was. It was like, who can apologize best to Santhi? Although I feel Amy did the opposite. Amy was the only one who wasn't. She was like guilting her. She was like, I was going to take you to the end. And Santhi was like, I've done it to myself. And she did really well in that situation. So also credit there that she's like the one Zumba person who doesn't have to go hat in hand and actually kind of chastises Santhi. And Santhi is like, I agree with you. I'm with people now who treat me badly. But like Santhi thinks everyone treats her badly. So I don't know where that. Last week, Zumba treated her badly. Who can treat Santhi right?
Or at least like the least bad, I think, is who wins out the week. What is interesting, though, speaking of Santhi, she has a really odd read of Smash, where when Kieran proposes the Anella vote, Santhi refuses, again, partially because of what's going on with Sean, but she says Anella is an absent-minded player. And again, I'm wondering, is this like a lie she's putting forward to get what she wants, or does she truly believe that this guy is what we're assuming everyone else thinks of Renier? Because I feel like that is a dangerous underestimation of who Kieran feels might be the most well-connected player of the Zombas.
I thought that was just a lie to try and get them to vote for Sean over Anella, just because she has that better relationship with Anella and doesn't. And obviously Sean was targeting her. So to me, that was just good play on Santhi digging her heels in because she knew that Kieran had to yield to her because she was the swing vote.
And because she has been that player and she uses it to her advantage, where you aren't like shocked that she can have this reaction where she's like, I can't spend another day here with Sean and I will not relent. And because she has been that player, they buy it and they do it. And the thing is that it's all part of like a larger plan, like the largest plan being, okay, this will get Zumba further and then filter down to Smash and Santhi's like internal relationship and then filter down to her saying like, no, I just hate Sean. And that's the subterfuge that they're buying of like, okay, this is an anti-Sean thing. Like, no, it's like a pro-Smash thing. And then beyond that, it's like a pro-Zumba thing. And like, you guys are in trouble. I'm so sorry.
So from that perspective, let's go back to Sean for a second. Because do you think where Sean loses this episode is that he ends up like yelling at Santhi on that drunken
they
night?
They all yelled at Santhi.
But I do feel like the
even
reason
Amy
why Santhi
does.
But the reason why Santhi specifically goes after Sean seemingly is because she feels like she's talking with Nicole and she feels like Sean is listening in. Like it feels like Sean, it particularly is grinding that axe for about 2.5 days before he finally makes that last minute olive branch to her. And I do wonder, had he not gone so voraciously against her, could Smash have been voted out here instead of him?
I think he lost the game just because he had a worse relationship with Santhi than the other Zumba people, and probably also because he was targeting her. I mean, it was a hilarious scene where she was revealing that Inesu was a double agent, and she was like annoyed that Sean was listening, and then Sean's like part of that alliance, but she doesn't want Sean to know because she doesn't trust Sean. So even though it's obviously going to get to Sean and eventually, but I think it was just about Santini's relationships with everyone in Zumba.
I think it's about Santini's relationship with Sean. I think it's about Sean's relationship with Zumba, because I think that if Inesu comes to Amy and is like, tonight we're sacrificing Smash, I think Amy might be like, no. Like, at that point, no. Can we figure something out? Can we make it Sean? But because it is Sean already, they're all like, all right. So I think that it comes down to both of those things. I also think, like, he came at her, but that can't be the problem. It's probably, as Jason says, like, a bit of a larger long-term relationship. And it's also that he apologized the latest. Like, yeah, he dug his heels in for longer. And that as well speaks to the relationships, that he did that, that he's had the negative break with Santini to do that. And the fact that more information was fed sooner to the rest of Zumba. Amy comes to Smash sooner and is like, make up. And he's like, all right. And he goes and does that. So she, if she does that to Sean, if her relationship with Sean is closer to Smash, then she comes to Sean a day before and is like, no makeup, we're sacrificing Smash, basically. And then Smash is the one digging his heels in for an extra day. So I think it does speak to all of that. And, like, his mistakes are just based on those, like, long-term, maybe more disparate connections than someone like Smash had.
I mean, it's really interesting because, again, we talked about how in the pre-merge, it just so happened to be that the Zombas had essentially culled out all of the outsiders in that original tribe. And I would say Sean wasn't necessarily at the bottom, but he was certainly the last to join that contingent. And I know Marisha ended up going out before him. But yeah, to your point, I think he did not necessarily benefit from the fact that despite he was tight with Anella and Rainier, that it did still seem like, you know, if you did a coconut chop challenge between those five remaining Zombas, I would imagine Sean gets chopped first.
Yeah, but they were all tight, but someone's got to go. Like, someone has to be sacrificed, right? Like, Zumba has been, I do think, would have taken to the six. I think that he would might have been six, but, like, right now, someone has to go now. And, like, they were all fine with sacrificing him.
I think Sean, you know, just treated Santini the worst, as you said. I mean, she used to find the people that treat her the best, and he was the person in the game that treated her the worst. Or the, you know, and that's why he was voted out.
Yeah, it's a tough one because, like, a lot is being done. I don't think Santini will be happy with anything. Like, even at times where she's, like, she's the third wheel, she's been in, like, threes to do that. Like, imagine if Wilder was coming now and being, like, I'm the third wheel. It's like, yeah, but you're a really tight three. Like, there's no third wheel. This isn't a relationship. So, like, I worry for Santini again in that because, yeah, even when things seem to be on the level, it's still not good enough. And then also when things are bad, like, she is out of the Vuna three, then it's going to be, like, really chaotic. So fire is coming for these players is what I would say in a lot of different ways. I'm really interested to see how it pans out because, as we said, there's all these plans and we can kind of see it. We're kind of, like, halfway through. Like, I feel like, you know, we were in the first part of, like, a two-part movie right now about how this will play out. Then we see in the next time on there's, like, a big twist coming. It looks like the tether twist from, I hate to say it, but from Sequester. And I hate to say it because that took Mike Bloom out. And it crushed my heart to its very core.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I think I blocked it from my memory.
I'm glad that had such an important effect on your life.
So let's explain this. So again, this, I don't know if this is completely how it's going to turn out, but I believe, because the episode, I think, is called, like, Tied Destinies, and we get in the tree mail as well. because this is actually a twist, I believe, from the French version it originates, and how it basically works there was that for a round, players paired up, and if one person won immunity, the other person won immunity as well, and if one person was voted out, their partner was voted out too. And I think a lot of intrigue is going
to
come.
But how are they paired up in that?
See, that's the thing. I'm not sure. Is it a random draw, or do they pick their partners? That's going to, I think, really be the determinant as to what's going to happen. Knowing the virus South Africa, it's going to be random, right? It's gonna be random.
Imagine, like, Wilder and Smash.
I would hope that it's just competing together in the immunity challenge and then being sent to Immunity Island together rather than voting together and being sent home together, but because that would kind of be game breaking, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, look, last week everyone was like, oh my god, are they gonna, like, split them like they did in Ghost Island because of the reward challenge? It was just a reward. So I guess hard to know, but I would agree, like, I don't wanna see someone go home. You know, if next time they're voting out Tyson because Zumba's really winning this, and then they have to sacrifice, like, imagine if it's, like, Tyson and Nicole, and Zumba are like, well, we're already on this train. We're already sacrificing people for the greater good.
This reminds me of the Black Knight from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where just limbs keep getting hacked off of Zumba.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just a fresh wound.
Yeah. I've still got some fighting spirit within me. I don't need arms to fight.
Yeah, like, which one of you can be sacrificed? Like, maybe that will be it. Maybe it'll be, like, if they're Zumba and they're trying to win this, and they need the swing votes, and maybe it will be, like, whatever Vuna is tied to Nicole, it's like, we can lose you. That's bad.
Like, it would be pretty disappointing if they were voted out together, just because I feel like the next vote is going to be so interesting and it would kind of rob us of that. But I think, on the other hand, it's going to be really interesting to see two people go to Muni Island when you have that idol there. It's going to be that mad dash.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, too. Now Ward is like, oh, crap, I should have taken it. Now you're going to have two people essentially. Well, that's the other thing, too. What if there's a stalemate? What if one person wants to stay and play and one person wants to give up and go?
I love that. I mean, what would they do in that situation? I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to see it play out. I agree that there's enough chaos with these players that we don't necessarily need a big twist. I think we might get one. And I think that
you guys are on production, can't you?
No, we can't.
Again, we were consulted on some a few things, the Immunity Island stuff, namely being that.
Yeah, honestly, I think a lot of my stuff is getting buried in the give up and go right now. Like, I know that I was giving a lot. Like, most of what I tried to do was like clamp down on any of the game stuff. I was like, it's coming like a lot. Like, yeah. So I think I was giving like tiny little, you know, advantages and disadvantages to stay and play. And I think that stuff's getting lost now because people are leaving and I'm kind of upset. I want to come on like Mike Bloom and be like, this was mine. But like, Warda, now we don't get to see it. Thank you. Thank you for making the Warda right decision. Yeah, and doing that.
Yeah, thanks for helping your alliance.
Yeah, no one thinks about, you know, no one thinks about production. No one thinks about the person who put time into those games to stay and play. And now you don't stay and play. And now they're just lost to the universe as if they never even existed. And I was there and I was making those twists. So thank you for that.
You know, but Shami, we've always talked about the possibility of there being lost seasons, like they were just bad seasons and they just never aired. So this is kind of the same thing.
This is a long-term theory that Jason and I have had. I can't believe you're bringing that up. We've always said, like, what if there was a season so bad that they just, like, never aired it? But then we're like, what about Survivor?
Like, really toxic, you know?
Yeah, no.
Then there was Iron of the Idols.
Yeah, Survivor has consistently disproved this theory to us.
I think if the television landscape, specifically from a CBS perspective, did not exist the way it did, then there that could be the thing. Like, there was, for example, a season of a show called I Love Money that got canceled because one of the contestants later murdered his ex-wife and then killed himself.
This is not the first time that you've mentioned that, I feel, on this podcast.
No, that's a big piece of reality TV history. I talked about it because I talked about it on the RHAP Rewind. But yeah, it's very few and far between that act reality shows or act seasons will sort of go under the radar. You have to have a really damn good incriminating reason to not let a season see the surface of light.
Well, no, Jason and I used to, because we love Survivor so much. And during like the late 20s, I'm sure it was during this like really golden age, we're like, how is Survivor consistently so great? Maybe they film two seasons side by side. They just air the best one. we used to say that, right? Yeah. And then again, consistently disproved by just like terrible Survivor. Right?
Yeah.
Unless your theory is correct, and this is like the less bad seasons that we get sometimes.
Ooh, yeah, what was the other Island of the Idols? I started to think people died on that season.
I'll never tell. I was out there in both alternate universes. I've seen both sides of the mirror.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you were interviewing the people from the other season, which was Survivor Smart versus Dumb, right?
Yeah, tell us, Mike.
Yeah,
exactly. No, actually, they created an alternate universe version of myself. We essentially, since the multiverse is broken, thank you, Sylvie. We actually diverged into that back in 2019. So I can't really talk about it yet. It's coming in a future Marvel film that I'm starring in, but I'll give you a little tease.
This is a Survivor multiverse. Yeah, this is what it is. Like, the Survivor multiverse.
Return Survivor fourth phase.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're kind of getting into, I think. So look, I don't know how we got here is my point, but that is a legitimate theory we used to talk about. And like I'm trying to say, we talk too much Survivor throughout our lives. And that's the thing that happened. So should we get to the chizzy after all this? Like, I think we've talked it through. We're concerned for a lot of people. I think we've consolidated that Vuna very much lost this vote, even though they didn't. And I think we're excited for what's to come and hoping that a twist doesn't break it that much. Maybe it'll just be another sacrifice from Zamba. They can still have their plan, but just like, now you got to go. Now that they've started that, now that they've got the ball rolling on people can be sacrificed, I'm kind of scared for their alliance. Like, I don't want to be the next sacrifice.
You know, in the multiverse, the Chizzy's called the Panaji.
Wow. That's crazy. Who am I in that? I guess if that were true and it was so different, I think that I would be pruned.
Does that mean that Matt Chisholm is, that Survivor New Zealand didn't exist and Matt Chisholm was never the host? Because I don't want to live in that world.
No, I don't. I mean, maybe at that point, I just am not stubborn and will just change the name to go with the franchise. Also, I hear in the multiverse that they do 1, 2, 3, which is something you guys are trying to do it, and we're going to get pruned. Stop.
Actually, I think I'm going to do 3-2-1.
Yeah. Today. Good.
I'm going to go 2-1-3.
Interesting.
2-1-3, you say? That's what they do in the other multiverse.
You've got to be flexible.
No. No, you can't. Stay on your timeline. This is what I'm trying to say. Never, ever deviate from anything, ever.
No, is that what... Is Sanity a variant? Is that what she is? She just, like, keeps jumping around. She doesn't stay on her path.
That's what I think it is.
Are you saying that going 3-2-1 instead of 1-2-3 when giving out the chizzy makes you a variant?
No, I'm saying 1-2-3 makes you a variant.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Okay, well, also, anyone who didn't watch Loki is lost in all of this. You should actually watch Loki.
I think even if you watch Loki, you're lost in all this. We're just talking pure gobbledygook at this point.
That is true. I knew that this would happen when talking to the both of you at the same time. Getting pruned as we speak. Anyway, let's go to the chizzy, which in the multiverse, in the other timelines, this is not the chizzy theme song that we get, but I'm so glad that we get it in this universe. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
In the multiverse, in the other timelines, Biostrath is still a sponsor. It's a great place to be. Yeah.
And Steers, maybe.
Yeah. What a time.
Love Steers. The only sponsors that we've both tried are now no longer sponsors. So
yeah. I mean, I've had both Steers and Biostrath. Yeah.
I will make a note, though, speaking of some sponsors, that I did get a lovely care package from the great aforementioned Larubota, and he did send me some Future Life. So
amazing. We cut them recently from the branch law.
Yeah, but I also don't know. I think to a point that Marion made all the way back in week 3. Like, I don't think it's worth a taste test on air, but I'm happy to at least get a sample to see, like, okay, was this worth Anella, like, you know, still scrounging some away and then blaming it on Paul at the end of the day? I shall see.
Okay, can Future Life make a comeback a la Edge of Extinction or Redemption Island, or is it done?
I want to talk about that. I do, because Future Life was doing a lot this week, and honestly, it's gotten to the point where it's so chaotically terrible that I'm kind of back in. Like, it was so bad.
We're not
even
in the segment yet.
Okay, I know. But in this timeline, we get there before the chizzy. It's madness. It is madness. Right. That we do the Biostrath variety hour before the chizzy. We do the questions at the top of the podcast. It's just, it's all over the place. Guys, are you following along?
More messy than Sanity's game.
Exactly. Multiverse, are you guys getting it? We're in a multiverse right now. Okay. Right. Who in this timeline should give their points first for the chizzy? Mike, do you want to start us off? Last time I tried to start you off so that you couldn't break it, you still managed to. So
yeah,
I don't even know anymore.
Again, that's why I'm also... Josh Regler once upon a time called me the Loki of post-show recap, so I had to stay true to my name here.
Absolutely.
I'll go first. I have a much more concrete 3-2-1 or 1-2-3 than I did last week. So I am going to give one. I'm going to give one to Amy.
Mike!
What?
One to 80. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Continue.
I think she was the most impressive of the Zambas. I think she did a lot of great work. I think I'm still going to dock her points because she technically is still in the minority at this point.
And she won the vote.
Yeah, we're going to bully you now. This is where we team up against you. Like, what?
Oh, no, finally. I was waiting for the
I think
guests.
I heard Jason make like a sound of pain when you said one point to Amy.
Well, listen, this is for this week. It's not for next week. So I'm talking about this week.
She was amazing this week.
Okay. I'm giving her points, though. That's, she still gets point. One point yeah. in my book because I think she did a very good job. I think her conversation with Inesu alludes to a relationship that we really haven't seen. I think she seems to be the one to really have the best conversation with the both double agents. And I think that is planting the seeds for some great stuff to grow in the future, but not for this week, which is why she gets 1 point.
Oh,
I'm going to give two. I'm going to give 2 points to Santini.
2 points to Santini.
She gets done. She accomplishes what she wanted. She gets rid of Sean. She determined who went here. Were it not for her, Sean would not be going. She was able to get her alliance to do what she wants. That means a lot in my book. And I think the fact that she was still able to remain with the Vunos, it still seems like she could still flip, despite the fact that she may have burned some bridges. Like, the Zambas begrudgingly still want to work with her.
Begrudgingly being the word.
Yes, but still, she had people come to her hat in hand to do this stuff. You know, yes, it was for her as a number, but that still gives her ammunition to hop back when she wants to. So I still think there is plenty of road for Santini to blaze this weird winding trail that she has here. So yes, she is getting my 2 points. and 3 points once again going to Inesu. I think she was able to have really spot on reads in terms of what's going on with Tyson. I think the way she approached the conversations with Amy and the Zambas was really interesting in that she was so open. To Jason's point, like, this was a very honest episode. We were far from the duplicity of last episode, where I was frankly shocked that Inesu went to Amy and basically said, I can't vote with you this time. Because again, that is so dangerous to say in the game of Survivor. But I think it speaks to all the relationships that Inesu has with the Zambas that we're finding out about, and just like the way she's coming across, that I think she has endeared herself to both sides. I think she is recognizing her spot in the game, and I think she's in a really, really great position while these two sides are taking aim for each other. So that's my 1, 2, 3. If you don't like it, suck on it.
Well, okay. My gosh. I mean, Santini is holding everyone hostage. They have to work with her, which I guess good, but they also don't want to, and it's getting really dicey. I mean, she like outed Inesu for no reason. She got 2 points.
I think her odds of winning decreased in this episode.
This was the worst episode she's had. And, like, look, she's been great. Winning the Chizzy, but, like, come on, Mike. This was not...
I made... They're my points. I do what I want to with my points.
You are chaos.
At least she didn't give it based on your points.
Yeah.
To counter it.
You got some pushback from that last this week, right? That you gamed it last week after I said, don't game the Chizzy. And this,
listen,
and I wasn't vocal enough about it, and now I am.
They doubted Galileo. But look where we are now on a round Earth. So that's all I'm going
to
say.
Are you comparing that to your Chizzy points?
Maybe.
Because that's not even nearly as important as your Chizzy points.
How did we get there?
Yeah. All right. Jay, last time I spoke to you and I said it was tough to decide my Chizzy points with you, mainly the one without you, because I talk about it with you every week, but we didn't discuss it this week. And you said the 3 and 2 were obvious, but not the one. And I'm thinking we're probably in the same boat. So you give me your 1, 2, 3 right now, or 3, 2, 1.
All right. I will start with 3 because I think it's pretty clear that 3 points goes to Amy. I mean,
yes! Good! Yes, you stay in the family. I think
she just put in so much work this episode. Like she flipped Inesu by giving her information. She seemed to flip Santini by managing that relationship and that really important conversation that we saw. She savagely cut Sean by stabbing him in the back, which is so many amazing things that she did. I think she deserves those 3
Lady
points.
Beth. Brilliant. Brilliant episode from Amy. Well-deserved 3 points. Yes.
2 points is going to go to Inesu. I think she equally managed that conversation really well with Amy, as we've talked about. I think it was correct for her not to flip this vote because it'd be giving the Zamba 5 too much power. But then the next vote, I think it will be correct for her to flip. So the fact that she, as we've said so many times, the fact that she can just go to Amy and openly say that she's not being, you know, voting with her and have it work out is just incredible. And also the fact that she was out as a double agent and didn't have any effect on her game, as we've said, it's just, just really incredible from Inesu. And then one vote, I was wavering between Kieran and Smash.
Me too!
But I'm going to give it to Kieran because I think he did it.
Related or something.
I think Kieran, so you didn't even need me to help you with your votes.
Yeah, no, I love this. That's good. It really validates me. Continue.
Yeah, I think Kieran just did a bit more than Smash. So Smash gets the honorable mention. You know, he won that crucial immunity, sent Warda, which was the correct decision, as we've said. And I think he correctly kind of caved to Santini because she was a swing vote. So that's my votes.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know if I spoiled my votes by the way that I was reacting to you. I'm going to give 3
Not
points.
Not at all. Real poker face on you right there.
No, I'm going to give 3 points.
The suspense is killing me.
No. can you imagine? I'm not Mike Bloom. I'm not going to just be chaotic. 3 points to Amy. I mean, you've said it, Jay. She's great. She was perfect. Perfect minority game. Like, this is like the one time. It's very rare that I would give 3 points to someone who lost the vote. But I think we just spent an hour and a half talking about how they didn't really lose. And that's all on her. Like, just the amount of work. I just love that like realization I saw in her eyes where she's like, oh, if we don't have Inesu, we're screwed. And then she just went to work and she put in the work in her own conversations and she pushed other people into the right conversations. Like, she made other games better. And she was ruthless. Like, sacrifice Sean. It was evil. Like, it was cold-blooded and I loved to witness it. I loved it. No, like, literally, like, she's talking to Sean about his own blind side without him knowing. She's talking to him about the greater good.
Probably thought there was like a 5% chance of Sean's plan, you know, for Wilder working, but like, you know, she was basically sacrificing.
Right. No. Well, that's why she said we all have to vote for Warda, right? Like, we all have to be a united front just in case they happen to vote with us.
But she does tell us when she's voting in the secret scene of all the votes, she's like, I don't think this vote is going to matter. Like, yeah, you could hope against hope. you know, definitely you're hoping that Santini will do anything, like, for sure, but I don't think she believed it was going to happen. She made the sacrifice, and I think it will pay off for her down the road, and I think she deserves those points now, because the work was put in now, and a twist may screw it up or whatever, but, like, she did the right thing, and she just pivoted so well, and, yeah, I mean, they all could have kind of gone on the Santini plan, but they didn't, and I think this was better for her, and, yeah, ruthless. Very, very cool from Amy. I'm going to give 2 points to Inesu. Agree with you, Jay. She's the one who set up the sacrifice plan to begin with as well. I think that gets lost because Amy took it and did so well with it, but she's like, it's not going to be any of those names, like, let's go. And they decide on it together. They very much worked in tandem. Phase one is complete, I think, with her plan to flip. And I think the important thing is, like, it's not emotional because she's right. If I was getting confessionals from Wired and Typhon being like, yeah, we're a four. It's always been us four, but Ines was just a double agent. I'd be like, no, what are you doing? But because they keep telling me it's a three, I'm like, yep. You read it. You're right. Good job. I was reading it wrong. I thought that maybe you were just a little bit too paranoid. Nope. She's right. Give her 2 points. Absolutely on point with that. And then I'm going to go a little bit different to Jason because we're not twins. We're just siblings. I will give the honorable mention to Kieran. I thought that his instinct to take out Smash was correct, but relenting also definitely correct. He made the right. I think that he was right to win the challenge. I think sending Warda, you got to do it. He's been backed into some difficult corners, but I also think, like, not a good episode for Vuna in general. And he has to, like, all of them have to suffer for the fact that the hierarchy is obvious. As much work as he's putting into trying to not make that obvious, like, it is. And that is something that they should be very worried about. I'll give the point to Smash. He did very well to reconcile with Santini. He was only a target as well because he's so likable and integral to Zumba, which is, like, a good thing. And he outpaced Sean, as Mike would say, when it mattered by burying him with Santini. And that, like, that line of, hey, you know that Sean's been putting your name out? That, for me, is the 1 point right there. So I have the leaderboard, assuming that I have it correct. So Santini maintains her lead now on 30. Kieran, with Jason's point, goes up to 27. Then we have Typhon on 21, and Inesu now has gone up to 21. We have Rainier on 15. Carla is still on 14. Chappies is on 13, and Amy this week went right up to 12. Smash went up to 4. Dino on 2. Warda and Marisha on 1, and Sean leaves on 1. So I'm pretty sure those are all the points. Every week I'm like just doing math on the fly. Who knows? But I'm pretty sure that's where we're at.
Kieran's running a spreadsheet, he has admitted, in his own mind. So this is very much after the fact, but let us know if the math's wrong.
I know, I felt so bad because last week I said, like, Typhon just edged out Inesu, but he just edged out Inesu and Kieran. And I'm like, if anyone's going to pay attention to that and know, it's Kieran. So, hey, let me know, Kieran, if I did it wrong. Actually, can you come onto the podcast once a week just for this 5 minutes just to check my math? I'd really appreciate
I don't think
that.
He's allowed to do just that. Maybe can your secret cousin that sounds a lot like you come onto the podcast for 5 minutes a week?
He doesn't have to talk. He just has to tell me that my math is right. Like, I'll edit it out. I just want him to know. I mean, Jason, you're good at math. Is my math right?
I wasn't following it. Okay. I'm sorry. I know you've now delegated the Chizzy leaderboards to someone else, which is good because it's quite a lot of work. So yeah. Maybe Kieran can take it on for future seasons.
That look, I called you my brother/intern at the beginning of this podcast. Like, what interning are you currently doing? I've outsourced everything to other people. Other than giving me some takes every week and you talk about the episodes every week with me for like an hour, which I do appreciate. Like,
seems like a lot for an intern.
Aww.
I don't know. You're just my brother at this point. It's pretty useless to me.
No longer a slashy.
Yeah, that's true. Should we get to the Biostrat Variety Hour? Take it away, Jake.
We already did.
No, so we've got a lot. We've got a lot more to go. Believe me. Take it away, Jake. Take it away, Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now it's the Biostrat Variety Hour with your hosts, Shannon Goss
and
Mike Blue. Biostrat, it's delicious.
Oh my god! Why was it so thick?
One.
So I want to say that Inesu and Amy tied the Shizzy as well. It's important for me to say that. I hadn't actually given a winner.
Congratulations.
That seems fair.
Yeah, that actually feels right, doesn't
it? We're both good.
Again, assuming the math is correct, which at this point, I don't even know. Okay, so Biostrat Variety Hour. Before we get to the sponsors, I want to talk about what I think should be a sponsor. LaRue, get on this. So at the reward, they were drinking Spaletta. Mike, do you have Spaletta?
I mean, is that like a letter you write to a spa when you want to join? I have no idea what that is.
All right. Did you notice that the reward that they were drinking, like, it's like a soda brand, and they have different stuff, and they have Sparletta cream soda, which I love. I have mentioned that when I go to the South African store, it's my eight-year-old taste buds. I always come out drinking Sparletta. It was that, like, bright, toxic green drink they were drinking. It looks like Slurm from Futurama. Did you notice how green this drink was?
Oh, that was, like, the Ecto Cooler they were drinking.
Yeah. So that was, I confirmed with LaRue that that was Sparletta, and I would love for them to sponsor, because I realize Sparletta is the first brand I ever stand, right? Jason, can you tell me if you have a memory of this? Because I asked Mom this week, and she said she doesn't, and I'm feeling very gaslit about my own experiences. But when I was a kid, we went on holiday. I think we were, like, at Cabana Beach in Umhlanga, and I entered, a dance contest that was sponsored by Sparletta, and the prize was, like, a Sparletta prize pack with, like, all the Sparletta merch and, like, Sparletta products. And I didn't win, but I came second, and I won a t-shirt that said Big Daddy, because Big Daddy was in cinnamon. Do you remember this?
Oh, the movie. Yeah. Okay.
What year did that come out?
1999. I checked. It tracks.
Look, I would have been 4 or 5 then, so I feel like I don't have a good recollection of that, but I'll trust your 6 or 7-year-old memory.
I definitely didn't make this up, because it's way too specific. And I think if you look back at childhood photos of us, like, I'll be wearing a t-shirt that says Big Daddy. Why else would I have that t-shirt?
Well, if you've got the receipts, then probably.
Okay, listen, I'm going to find
Shannon, we know how much of an Adam Sandler fan you are, okay? You don't have to cover up there with some sort of contest. You had this t-shirt, you wore it, you repped it with pride.
I do like the movie Big Daddy. But I think that, like, I remember that first prize was for all the Sparletta stuff, and I lost. And I think I was like, I love the brand. This is the first brand I ever stand. And they did have them in the reward. LaRue, can we get Sparletta to sponsor? Like Ting Ting was saying, we should get brands on board. Sparletta is a South African soda company. We're drinking it on reward. I once entered a dance contest and lost out on their product. Sparletta, sponsor Survivor.
You're already on production. I don't think you could now be some sort of brand marketing person.
Brand consultant? Like, I think I could be. That's what I should be. That's what I was destined to be.
I mean, that's what Shannon is essentially jockeying for. Like, this is her audition for that job. I mean, listen, I'll admit I wasn't concentrating on Sparletta.
Go back and look at how green this drink is. It is sugar.
Well, I wasn't concentrating because look, let me just, like, look around for a second. Yo, that was some nasty ass pizza they were eating. Just saying.
Really? I wasn't concentrating on the pizza because I was like, Sparletta. That's what the brand, that's what the ads used to be like.
I was focused on the idol.
Yeah, exactly.
When they showed the pizza, that cheese looked like so caked on and dry. It just did not look very fun. I know that we have become snobs about Fijian pizza as of late. And I imagine that it was battered with rain while it was going on. But I'll admit, it did not look like the most appetizing thing. So maybe you need some Sparletta to wash down that questionable pizza.
I think South African pizza probably beats Fijian pizza, though. I mean, I think it looked fine as far as Survivor pizza goes. It's probably from the Wild Coast Sun. But good.
Look, I love that Mike is like, I wasn't focused on Sparletta because I was focused. I thought you would definitely thought you were going to be like, because of all the idol shenanigans. And you're like, but the pizza, can you please go back and look at how green that drink is and tell me that you don't get. I was immediately like, Sparletta, it's a cream soda. It's so green. It's like when you drink it, you definitely feel like this is eroding my insides. But man, is it good. Sparletta, if you sponsor Survivor, I will never say a bad word about you. I'll never again say that it erodes your insides. I won't say that again. And I will stand you 100%. Come on board.
I mean, to be fair, like, say, oh, you know, they haven't had those types of illicit soda drinks in the past. But, like, 7-Up was a sponsor of Survivor for quite some time. So, like, they have been there before.
The fridge full of Coke? This is, like, a Survivor staple, I feel.
Yeah, but I feel like Coke maybe has a bit more, at least, to it in terms of taste than something like 7-Up or God help us, Mountain Dew.
Sparletta is very tasty. Sparletta cream soda.
Anyway, Sparletta beats 7-Up.
Yeah, Sparletta's maybe, like, if I could have one soda for the rest of my life, I might go with Sparletta cream soda. Every single time I leave the South African store, I come out drinking Sparletta, and Peter's like, what is that extremely green drink? Why are you a child? Why are you drinking this? That's going to kill your teeth and your insides. And I'm like, yes, but, like, it was worth it. Anyway, that's about the time that I entered the Sparletta dance contest. Moving on with the podcast. I hope people are into this. It's been 2 hours, guys. Mm. So, you know, I hope that this
will be a table setting episode. Usually it's at the 3 hour mark when we're going this off the rails. Exactly. So.
Is that off the rails that I want a Big Daddy t-shirt in a spotlighted dance contest?
That is the definition of off the rails.
I'm also confused because, like, in my memory, I could never come second in a dance contest. That's the one thing making me be like, was it just a talent competition and I sang? But I feel like I'd remember that. Like, I definitely, like, was there only two people who competed? Because that's the only way I feel like I could have possibly come second.
I actually have to say, I don't think I remember it. It may have been in another multiverse.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Oh, that could be true.
Yeah, in that multiverse, I'm an incredible dancer and I'm always wearing a Big Daddy t-shirt.
And Spotlight is sponsoring Survivor SA.
Ugh, I want to live in that world. All right, to the actual sponsors. What is this segment? So the lower thirds, as I said, Stay and Spray gone. I find that hilarious. They're like, unfortunately, we can't cover you this week. They're not doing it anymore. But we did get Someone's Just Lost Out insurance when the orange team won reward. That was
fun. I love that. Do I wish that that was the reward where they got the sponsored OutSurance Mexican Feast. That would have made even more sense.
Yeah. Well,
I love OutSurance. I think OutSurance should be the brand that you stand. That's my.
Oh, you really just? I thought I was going to ask at the end, like what brand? Because
I like this. This is Shin. This is the hometown. Yeah, business, exactly. Right. Shin's like, all right, but you have to tell me who you like.
They have one pun and they just commit to it. It's like that sitcom character just has one joke. They're like the Magnitude for Community, just saying pop pop all the time, and everyone loves it. And they just, I personally love it. Mm. And all their puns make sense. Like a lot of the other brands, when they're going, their tweets just kind of a generic or don't really make sense. I don't link to their brand. I don't think to Survivor. But for them, every single tweet links to both their brand with the out and to Survivor. It's perfect.
Yeah, but they really shoehorn it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I do like that they, like, weirdly, they didn't sponsor 6 and 7. Then we watched Champions, which they did sponsor. And now they're sponsoring this. It's like they're going on our personal timeline.
They were OutSurance, now they're back in.
Yeah, the insurance. Oh no, that's the thing. So, I mean, like, I appreciate that you're going to go straight for telling me what brand to stand. I will consider it. They're definitely still in contention. But look, they had a very weird interaction on Twitter this week. They said, stop searching. We have the cover you're looking for with, like, a picture of everyone looking for the idol. I don't think they were looking for cover. I think they were looking for an idol. But anyway.
No. Well, to be fair, though, at that picture, I was looking specifically at the pizza and you were looking at Valletta.
Exactly. But then a random account that I clicked on and was just, it was so much porn. But anyway, I clicked on the account because they said, you have invaded my privacy, Mr. Lorenzo Peters. I want an explanation. And then OutSurance responded, this is concerning feedback and we thank you for bringing this to our attention. Please send us your policy or ID number via direct message so that we can address your concerns. We apologize for the inconvenience caused. This was the only interaction on the Survivor tweet. That's not going great for me.
Yeah, that's the only interaction. Nobody else responded except for this one person being like, I'd like to speak to your manager, please, about an unrelated matter.
Yeah, and they like, oh, you know, good on them for treating it so seriously. But this was just like a completely nameless, faceless porn account, which is so much porn. So I don't know. I don't know that OutSurance are doing enough, but I will say a lot of the other brands delivered this week, and I think it's heating up in the Branchula. Mahindra tweeted, while Oss and Dile think about who they'll be voting out tonight, have you booked a test drive in one of our vehicles yet?
That's what I said. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't link to the show. It doesn't link to their brand.
It makes no sense. Let us know which vehicle you'll be taking for a spin. Like what? So we're spent when they're thinking about who they'll vote out tonight. Like, that's the time where you watch the show the most. I'm not drifting off to think about what test drive I'm doing. Watch the show.
Know. No. Maybe they're speaking to the casuals, though, right? The casuals are really paying attention during the challenges. They like who they like, and sometimes they're just like, oh, there's too much strategy talk. I wonder what kind of car I should test drive. And Mahindra's like, I got you covered. Click this link.
Possible. They also tweeted, while the team's eyes were on their balls, Santini's eyes were on something else. And I like this because I'm currently covering both AU and SA, and this was a JLP tweet. So thank you for the dual coverage.
That's true. Balls. Very, that's very sexually lurid. I'm sure the porn-loving OutSurance disgruntled customer would have loved this as well.
Exactly. It's true, but actually they didn't comment on that. I would know. I'm just clicking on random accounts that are responding.
You've read through all that person's tweets, so you'd know.
Yeah, no, I clicked off very quickly. I will say it was not what I expected. Twitter is a lot. Twitter is a scary place.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful on Twitter. What I'm trying to say, you might click on someone responding to OutSurance and actually It's porn. Anyway, Cape Union Mart said...
The internet.
The internet. Oh, no, I clicked on the thing and it was porn. That is, I guess, the internet.
It sounds like in a bad Alanis Morissette lyric.
Well, isn't it ironic?
Clicked on a tweet. It turned out to be porn.
Clicked on a tweet. Oh, it was also porn.
Told everyone to look for a clue and it was sitting right next to me.
Yeah. So hard to be Santini. Isn't it ironic? I love that the porn episode of this podcast is the one I have my brother on for. So that's good.
Don't point that out. Don't say that.
Just hoping we just move right along.
Okay,
no one was thinking it.
They were. You were thinking it, Jay, right? You were like, why am I here? As my sister.
We are not each other's parents.
No, yeah, we're not. No. But it's still weird. It's still super weird. Okay, I'm going to move right on. Cape Union Mart says, goodbye, Sean. We will really miss you. And then a gif of Vladimir Putin clapping. I just thought.
Oh.
Yeah. Why? What are the brands doing this week?
What are they implying?
I don't know.
Is Sean Russia's favorite or least favorite contestant?
I mean, I guess maybe he's a personal favorite of Vladimir Putin. I don't know.
I feel like you don't, you know, put Vladimir Putin in.
Yeah. They're not doing that, right? There's a lot of clapping gifts. You could have chosen pretty much anything else, Cape Union Mart. Because I turned the computer to Peter. I'm like, this is Vladimir Putin, right? He's like, yeah. I'm like, all right. And I was like, this is just a lot of porn, right? And he's like, yep. I'm like, okay, goodbye. Anyway.
Oh, boy.
Okay, enough of this. The internet is scary. Fresh Stop said, going bananas? We've got some for you at Fresh Stop, proud sponsor of Survivor SA, with a picture of Warda.
She was going a little bit.
Yeah. Losing it at Tribal Council? We have bananas for you at Fresh Stop. All right, but I saved the best for last, because Future Life, as I said, are gone from the point of being so bad it's bad to so bad it's good, they might come back into the Branchula in a twist and shocking twist, which would mean we've gotten rid of one brand in the several weeks that this has gone on. But, okay. So, Mike, I know that it's your pet peeve when they don't understand what a vote is, but this week they did it multiple times. They said there is no hiding behind our vote. It's unanimous. Our vote goes to Future Life, Smart Nutrition for Life. Now, just want to put that out there. Okay. They also said, it's time for Tribal Council. Tonight, our vote goes to Future Life, Kids Cereal, because happy bellies means happy kids, a great start to the day. And then you have to, like, comment a GIF about, like, your favorite Future Life flavor cereal. And I got 143 responses, which was more than Cape Union Mart's, like, actually Survivor-specific thing, where they're like, who do you think will go home tonight?
How many were from porn accounts?
I clicked on every single one, and only 80 were porn. No. But also, they stole Cape Union Mart's thing, and they were also like, who goes home tonight, you could win Future Life. And then I was like, well, how will they know who went home tonight? Because they're not watching. So they've stolen that as well. They're like really doing a lot this week. I pretty much could have taken every tweet. They said, there is no reason to give up and go when you fuel with Future Life, Smart Nutrition for Life. But everyone is giving up and going. Get with the plan, Future Life.
But you want to go with Future Life. It's like an energy thing.
Yeah.
Like you don't want to give up, but you want to go.
Yeah,
you
don't want to more stay. So there's no reason to stay and play when you have Future Life.
Yeah, there's no reason to stay.
No reason to stay, but there's a reason to play.
It should be get up and go with Future Life. That's it. That should be the lower third. That should be the tweets. That's the marketing line. It couldn't be easier. Future Life should employ me. I've got so many ideas.
Or just play and go with Future Life.
Wait, no, wait. You dumped them. You said...
No, they might be back, Mike.
Boy, bye. Now you're like, I can make you so much better now. I need you need me.
Look, it shouldn't be my job to fix Future Life, but I will still do it if they hire me and pay me. So I've got more. They might not want to after the segment. Assuming they're listening. So they said, while immunity might be on the line tonight in Survivor SA, Future Life has you covered with a range of delicious, nutritionally smart foods. Only Future Life delivers smart nutrition for life. This is just completely unrelated. So what? While immunity might be on the line, our brand is great. Nothing. Nothing there.
here's your reminder while they're waiting out the immunity challenge that Future Life's great and you should have some right now, please.
Exactly. Exactly.
They need to streamline their tweets. There were just so many.
There were so many.
That's the thing. Yeah, like pick a few.
And they were all equally bad.
They're trying to cast a wide net, but that's a problem.
Yeah, and as well, it was like, I don't know how many to pull because they're all terrible. They said, raise your own stakes. Switch to Future Life. And then they're like, hashtag, like, it's all part of Survivor SA. Like, what is
this? Stakes were high.
Yeah. Like, what are they? The stakes couldn't have been higher, as we've discussed. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing with this, but I have to pull this tweet. I actually asked Mike, can I put this on the show? They said, on Survivor SA, every challenge calls for peak performance, which is exactly why we have taken our smart nutrition to Immunity Island. Hashtag change your health, change your world. Next line down, it said game explanation.
Yes, I'm so happy about this. Future Life got caught putting placeholder text in their tweets, folks. This is incredible.
Yeah, it said game explanation. What was that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Like I mean, I would imagine, right? Like that was them basically being like, okay, you know, they were trying to put in some sort of game explanation with a Future Life pun. Here's what happens when you divide yourself in too many places, Future Life, right? You were concentrating on so many different tweets. You couldn't fill in the game explanation part of your tweet, and you left it in there.
Yeah, somehow you did too much and not enough.
We need a Future Life tweet bot, because I think it would be as sensitive as, you know, make as much sense as the actual tweets.
Yeah, I would love that.
We could play a game, real fake Future Life tweets.
We pretty much have. Look, this is what I think. Jason and I have fought for a very long time about who invented the Rupert tweet game. We came up with it together. He insists that I was not a part of that. I think, to honor Jason being here... Considering that Future Life is the Rupert of brand tweets, I think I should bring them back.
I feel like that's doing a disservice to Rupert, if we're being quite honest. Rupert understands what a boat means in Survivor.
No, you're forgetting what his tweets used to be like. They were preloaded, and so were Future Life. Future Life at this point, I mean, they probably are worse because they left in this text by accident, but it's now so bad it's good. Much like many Adam Sandler films, and I am a fan of the film Big Daddy, all of it connects. Future Life is back. Huge shock in the Branchula. I will have to make a sacrifice.
Wow.
I'm going to have to make a sacrifice of who should go.
Oh, what about Puppy Security or whatever we have? Protea Coin.
You mean the... Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's probably... Yeah.
I say Puppy Security? Why did I think of that before Protea Coin?
Protea Bitfest Coin. Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
if you're protecting puppies, I think you keep...
Yeah, no, it's not protecting puppies. They are puppies who do security. That I would keep.
Okay.
That's amazing and adorable. But,
oh, yeah, can we get that? Can we get that as the sponsor next season? The non-existent puppy security brand?
LaRue, are you taking notes? We want Spalletta. We want puppy security. And we want the next package that you send to have Spalletta and puppies. Okay? That's what we want. I am going to... I don't even know. I mean, okay, yeah. We'll get rid of Protea Coin. Invest whatever, because I don't even know its name. And I think often in The Bachelor, like an intruder will come in and then like immediately leave because it's too late. But that doesn't feel like a real sacrifice. That's not like a Sean level sacrifice to bring Future Life back. I think we need like an OG to get out. Mahindra was funny this week. I think I'm taking out Jason wants me to keep out Shurins. They're doing well in the lower thirds. I will take your advice, Jay. I think maybe I'll just get rid of Cape Union Mart because they used a Vladimir Putin clapping gif and that was the best content they had. Like, that's the problem. Not the Vladimir Putin stuff, but the fact that, like, that was it. That's all I could pull for them.
All right. This is what happens. If you use Putin, you're pute out.
Pute out insurance, guys. Sorry about that. Maybe you should have had just, like, one great pun. And also they didn't give Tevin that jacket and that just doesn't sit well with me.
I forgot about that. Yeah, so sorry. Cape Union are actually one of the long lasting ones, you know, the one that survived the big culling of Steers and Biostrath. Shock boot here as welcome back Future Life to the competition. May your tweets be more generic and non-understanding of Survivor for future games.
Yeah, now them being in the competition rests on that. Like, it's really taken a turn. We're like, the worse you are now I'm into it. That's how bad it got. And I want to say that the Biostrath Variety Hour was as chaotic as Santini in this episode. We started at the Spalletta Dance Contest Big Daddy winning t-shirt. We went to porn. We went to porn for, like, a good long time. You know, too much time. And then we ended up on Future Life coming back and, like, a shock double elimination in this. Like, let's not lose sight of that. I'm exhausted. That was a lot. Absolutely a lot.
Future Life really is the Sanjaya of the Branchler, is it not? That, like, we are rooting for it to do badly?
I don't know who Sanjaya is.
Oh, you don't know the Sanjaya? Okay, here's my story time. Sanjaya was a contestant on American Idol season 6. And he was really not good. but people Aww. Kept voting for him because they thought it would be funny if he kept going through the competition.
No,
and so there was,
the
there was an entire site called like Vote for the Worst that like made this big campaign.
And it was porn.
It was not porn.
No, get your mind out of the gutter.
to vote for this kid. He was like 16 years old, but yes. And I mean, hopefully
he was 15. Those are,
oh, wow.
That's
recognized Sanjaya. He was much like the not like complete William Hung, but very much in their regard of he was a fairly good singer, but clearly he was not up to snuff with everyone else. He had ridiculous performances, like he had really long hair, and one time he made a pony hawk by creating a bunch of ponytails in a mohawk shape. One time he made a little girl cry while singing Aerosmith, I think. it's a whole thing. Look it up. That's essentially what Future Life is right now. We're rooting for them to do bad.
Now I feel kind of bad about putting that back in for this purpose.
Yeah, that doesn't. I mean, like, Future Life is a brand. It's not a human being. That feels really mean that they did that to a human. I hope he's okay. What happened to him since? Is he alive?
He was on a couple of shows because he was so famous. Like, I think he's taken everything relatively in stride.
Okay, well, what a fun story time. I love it. The Biostrap Variety Hour absolutely delivered this week. Loving every single part of that. What a fun time we had. I guess. No, that's really sad. Only America. Horrible thing to do. Horrible. I have questions, if that's what we want to get to. Pranay Das says, does Jason call you Shan off whenever he gets angry with you? Jason's never gotten angry at me, is the answer to that question. I never do the wrong chisel points.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I've never called you Shan off. If you ever called me Jace off, then I would have to call you Shan off. So let's not get into the cycle. Neither of us wants it.
In the multiverse, in the other universes, we are Jasoff and Shanoff. I don't really understand the multiverse. I think that's becoming clearer and clearer throughout this podcast.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of, I don't know what you're thinking is of this, but we'll go with it. We'll completely go with it.
I've told Jason quite a few times that I don't understand how the multiverse works, and I'm not sure if that's because of me or because some of the multiverse doesn't make a ton of sense.
It could be both.
Yeah, I think it is. So, Darling Francis asks, why are Tyson, Kieran, and Wirda, who are three people, considered more of a threat than Amy, Nicole, Anella, and Rainier, who are four people?
I mean, look at what these three are doing, right? Tyson's finding and playing all the idols, and Kieran keeps winning immunity. You know, yes, there is this idea of numbers, but the fact that these three people have essentially, throughout the post-merge, controlled winning immunity and sending people to Immunity Island and bequeathing necklaces does say something. That's a pretty powerful contingent. Yes, numbers do matter, but like when you get to the pointy end of things, if those three continue to control that specific flow of safety, that is very dangerous.
Wait, they're a bigger threat this week because they've got Santini and Chappies and Nessie voting with them, but from next week it'll flip completely when I think those people in the middle will go to OG Zamba and then they'll be more threatening. So maybe they'll have to flip back to OG Vuna then.
I mean, they definitely will at some point have to flip back because they want to be the biggest contingent, which is funny because, again, as we've discussed, Inesu and Santini don't seem just like natural allies. And also, because people don't really want to work with Santini, it seems like not only will she be a swing vote for the immediate future, she might be like a, you know, constant swing vote throughout the rest of the game. If they are trying to flip back between these two very divided factions, or at a point, maybe the Vuna 3, maybe through connections like Kieran and Rhaenyra, like, no more of this, and they come together. But I do think it's getting into that, like, voting block territory. But I think as well, like, the Zamba 4 are less threatening than the Vuna 3 at this point, because if you leave it and you do nothing, then they're going to win. Like, they're in the position of power, they're at the top of the hierarchy, so, like, that means something. That's why you have to change it up and go against possibly a smaller faction to change up the whole game, and then yeah, you're gonna have to take care of the fact that there's a four, and that's also dangerous, but just not right now as much as the other thing.
Not to mention that they just caught flat-footed, right? Like, they're not exactly coming across as strategic masterminds compared to what Tyson, Kieran, Wirda, and the other Vunas were able to pull off last time, which was just a masterclass.
That's true, and as we know, there's app blindness involved with Rainier, so there's some stuff going on. Last question, Sarah Carradine asks, I always play along with these memory challenges, making up a sentence of words starting with the first letter of the color or symbol. We saw Inesu on II make a story out of the objects to memorize the order. How would each of you approach this type of challenge?
Oh yeah, Jason, do you have a memorization method?
No, I kind of just brute force it by just, you know, repeating each color progressively as they come out. I'm not really good at those sort of memorization devices.
What about you, Mike?
So I sometimes do the story thing, but that gets tough between like black and blue specifically, right? Like, okay, I'll have B for blue and I'll have L B for black. No, I can't because black and blue both begin with the same first two letters. So what I like to do is I like to like put them in a song and sing them back. That happens a lot with like there's an old Disney cartoon with Professor Ludwig von Drake where he like talks about the colors and it's forever stuck in my head where he goes red, yellow, red, green, blue, 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 red, purple, orange, yellow, green, red, red. Like that's been stuck in my head for decades. And it's just colors set to a song. So I feel like if that can happen, you know, if you can get all these song lyrics stuck in your head for years and years on end, clearly my short-term memory means if I set these colors to a song, I'd be able to memorize it more so than any other method.
Yeah, but I think like it's because you know those songs so well. Like making up a song in the moment will be tough.
If I take an already existing song and put colors in, I think that would also help you. I'm not going to try to compose a song on the fly.
Okay. I mean, I can't do this challenge because I watch these episodes next to Peter who brute forces it like you do, Jay. And all I have is like him just like saying, because the thing is as well, like they can't just like say the words really loudly at the challenge after it because that would defeat the purpose. And I do think that just like saying it or singing it and like having it be out in the world is the best thing to do, but they can't do that in the challenge.
The other option I could think of is maybe if you don't go with the first letter of, especially with the colors, like don't go with the first letter, instead go with something that is that color, right? So if it's like, apple, you know, green, red, yellow, orange, it's like, oh, a turtle and a cardinal ate a banana and an orange for lunch, you know, out of a brown paper bag because brown's the last color. Like that would be an easy way to discern colors.
That's pretty smart. I like that. Yeah, that's good. I don't know
really enjoy
turtle and cardinal.
Well, they should do memory challenges more often.
Well, they have to, like, if immunity is going to be so important, I'm okay with it. But I just want a lot of diversity. So I want to see where they go with the challenges. Like, that is definitely important to me. Like, I want puzzles. I want, I guess this memory challenge was good. You know, let's do balance. Let's do threats. Like, let's, like, really get some diversity there and, like, really challenge some skills because the stakes, as we've discussed, have never been higher. So we'll see where it goes.
Remember when Darrow won an immunity challenge and everyone immediately knew that he got an advantage because he won a memory challenge?
Oh, Darrow. What a time we had. I'm glad this podcast is ending on Darrow. I love Darrow. But Jay, that's all I got. I was going to say, where can people follow you? You don't really tweet about the show. I was going to say, just like find your takes on this podcast through me.
Yeah, I can start tweeting.
Yeah, maybe you should. I mean, it's a lot of Survivor. Like, why aren't you tweet? You have so many thoughts about the show. Like, maybe you should tweet about it.
Yeah, can look into it.
Okay. Thank you for considering us.
Yeah, I'll consider your proposal and then I'll get back to you.
Can you at least make the future lifebot for us?
I don't have those skills.
I'll outsource it again.
I'm sure Sarah Carradine will do it
or someone else. Someone else will do it. Someone else who has taken over one of your many, many jobs. You got way too complacent in this role. But Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world?
I got a lot. Of course, the usual Lost and X-Files stuff over on post-show recaps. Big Brother interviews going on Parade.com. And Liana Boris and I are opening up the RHAP B&B this coming week. We're going to bring on Amon Adwin to talk about the first few weeks of Big Brother 23, which have been pretty off the wall, very fun cast. And we're going to have a lot of fun games to go alongside it. So if you're somehow tracking all of this madness along with Survivor South Africa, like myself, be sure to check that out. Very excited to be getting back together with Liana in a major capacity for the first time since like October of last year. Feels like forever, yet not. So it's an exciting time if you want to check that out.
Fun times. We also have a lot of fun happening in the world of International Survivor. Make sure you are subscribed to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed and follow us at Shannon Gates and at A. Mike Bloomtype so you never miss any of this. In Australian Survivor, we are heading into week 3 tonight. I talked about week 2 with the great Sarah Talik. Super fun chat there. And then for week 3, I'll be talking to Harry Heels about it and some exits. We've had one for week 1, one for week 2. I'm hopefully going to have more next week. So follow along so that you get all of that. And then in Survivor South Africa next week, we'll be talking to Jacques Berger. So we're excited about that.
Yes.
It should be a very strategic episode. So we kind of need Jacques' brain to be like, what are we looking at with this, you know, pairs twist?
Yeah, and I mean, Jacques was someone who had his own idol shenanigans going on. I'm assuming we're going to get that next episode as well. So I'm very intrigued to see how he reacts to this. And look, if you're saying that the twist next week might be something similar to something in Sequester, once upon a time, Jacques himself played in a Survivor alum Sequester game. So I'm sure he has some thoughts about that as well.
I'll never forget him talking to Nick and being like, do it for Shannon to try and connect with him. That's how we get him on the podcast. That's how we earned his spot back.
I also remember when Michelle Fitzgerald called him Jeff J. Queese or something like that.
You remember that, but you don't remember going out on your own tether twist.
It's called selective memory.
Exactly. Well, look, I had a lot of fun talking to my two favorite people. Two of my favorite people. I have a husband. Two of my three favorite people. And you, Mom. You, Mom, who definitely will listen to this one podcast because Jason was on it, even though I have lots of podcasts you can listen to. Anyway, two of my four favorite people.
I hope you skipped
people.
All the porn parts. Yeah. This is good. This is good.
I just ranked all your favorite people.
I guess I did. Not on purpose, but wow. Yeah. You know, honest episode of Survivor, honest episode of the podcast. I had so much fun chatting to you both. It went to some expected places and like the strategy and then some very unexpected places, which I'll have to just deal with, I guess. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, crying to my Big Daddy t-shirt that I still have in my mind.
I bet you turned that into a pillow. Don't lie to me.
I don't know where that t-shirt is. It probably got lost in like the many moves that we did. I'm telling you it existed. I'm telling you I didn't make this up, because if I made it up, I'm a crazy person and then I have to deal with that as well. So definitely I came second in this dance contest. It's a thing that happened. But anyway, I'm spiraling at this point. Mike, you had a very fun exit interview with Sean. I'm going to throw to that. Thank you to you both. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And let's hear from Sean.
All right, folks, I'm super excited to talk to this guy. He might have gone a bit out like a lamb, but he certainly came in like a lion. His tongue is as sharp as that machete that he missed after all those days in the pre-merge. So happy to be talking with Sean. Sean, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. And exciting to be on the podcast. I just wish it was much later on. Much later. Like after the season.
Second juror, definitely nothing to sneeze at, though. I think at this point, you and I were talking about it a bit before, like you wish still to this day, like months later, you were still out there if it meant competing for that million rand prize and the title of sole survivor.
You know, for me, it's not even about the prize money. It's just about that experience and just being able to excel when you think you've got nothing, finding a little extra bit in the tank. And Survivor really does that for you. So it's that, like I said, it's a bit of an addiction that you want to get back to. But also it's nice being comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, you can't take that for granted. So we see this past episode, you know, I was watching a video that Nico put out and he said that he felt you sort of came in with what he would say was a defeatist attitude into what would end up being your last tribal council. You said in your final words that, you know, you didn't necessarily give it the full Sean experience because I think you were a little worried about possibly turning Santini if she was going to vote with you. Talk to me about that. What was sort of your thinking and your emotional state in that tribal council where I think you had at least a good thought that you would possibly be the one going?
I kind of knew I was going. And that's the sad thing because, you know, as much as, you know, the whole trying to convince Santini to vote with us, it was too late in the game to change the strategy. You know, I'd spent 2.5 days driving the bus around with Santini's name on it. And to change it so close to tribal is chaotic. And I knew from that moment that, okay, you know, if we're going in with this plan, realistically, it's not going to work. But let me bite my tongue, keep quiet. Maybe Santini votes our way. But that's not the way. It definitely wasn't defeatist. It was more of a, I've got to bite my tongue in order to help my alliance because they think this is going to work. I don't agree with it. I think it's a stupid idea. But, you know, for the good of my alliance, I'm going to do it. So, like, everything for me in the game, I went in with the idea of being me. I can do this. And it very quickly turned to a we. So, you know, that's for me where the mindset changed as well. But
Well, let's contrast that to going back to the premiere. This is where the shenanigans begin, right? Where you really make a big performance at Tribal Council. I got to ask you about this, Sean, because it's something that's been on my mind since the very first episode. So did you think you were going, you know, what was the thinking behind the way you were acting at Tribal Council? Was it a performance, or did you truly think, you know, I am so frustrated, I'm going to be the first one voted out of this really great experience, as you spoke about?
Okay, so there's a couple of factors that come into it, right? So for the first 3 days, it was mine and Tian's name that just went around. That was it, right? Looking for idols, even though we're cleaning the food right in front of everyone, target on back, that's it. Everyone's targeting, because for the first few days, if you can find a common enemy, that's who you're going to target, right? And the talk was myself and Kian up until Trouble. You know, the whole Jason thing happened in a mere minute. It wasn't this 3-day plan. It was half an hour before Trouble, boom, this is what's happening. So when I told Kian, listen, it's either me or you, I'm going to have to go balls to the wall because everyone thinks I've got an idol. I haven't got an idol. The most I can do is cause some chaos. So I went into that Tribal under the theory of, okay, if I cause enough chaos, people will assume I've got an idol, because why is it playing this way? That will be the assumption. So I just went, fuck it, you know what? Just start hashing out everything, causing enough chaos to make people start questioning stuff. And a lot of things did come up, which helped my game move forward. So it was a very informative Tribal Council. You only see the Sean shit show, but there was a lot more. There was a lot more that came out of that Tribal than that. So when it came getting closer to the time to vote, no one was really wanting to change how they voted. Everyone was just, okay, let's just get to the vote, Nico, let's just get to the vote. We're not changing. No matter what I'm doing, this isn't working. So I'm going to have to vote Kia, because the talk for the last 3 days was more Kia. So if they thought about splitting the vote in case I had an idol, I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to take my vote and put it on Kia, and I'm here tomorrow. But I didn't have to do any of that. Like, nothing. I could have just sat there and kept quiet. I would have done it just as well. But then none of the information that came out of Tribal wouldn't have helped me change my game. And that was very important.
Interesting. So after that, you know, luckily you're able to get your way into that majority. And it seemed like in particular, you had really tight connections with Anella and Rainier. You even talked about it in your jury villa, right? That, these are the two guys that I'm rooting for. What was it that allowed you to connect with them, especially after everything that happened in that first Tribal Council?
So what you guys see as Tribal Council, right? And you can make your assumptions about that's how life is. Or you can take a moment back and think that's just a moment in many days. And that's just a moment out of many hours for Tribal Council. So the assumption that, yes, I was in a lot of trouble, but at the end of the day, I turned into this dad role on day two about looking after people, making sure the camp was sorted, making sure there's rooms. And when we got the fire, making sure the fire kept on going. And that kind of turned mine, Smash, and Rainier's relationship into a father-dad relationship. So these are like my two little kids, and they would sleep on my chest every night. And that's how the relationship grew, right? And when it came to that first tribe swap, I even said to Rainier when we gave each other a hug, I said, listen, I'm going to come for you. I'm going to come for you hard. You're going to think I hate you. But this is purely to get the three of us to merge. That's it. And they were the two people I trusted explicitly in the game. I trusted Santini explicitly as well until the Marisha vote, because we had worked so well causing chaos together from Zumba 2.0. So, yeah, it's interesting. But for me, the Rainier and Smash thing is, yeah, it was more than just a game. It really was. It's these moments that where life is hell, you question your sanity, and these are the people you talk to. These are the people you grow close to. And believe it or not, I actually spent a lot of time with Chappies. I spent more time with Chappies probably than most other people in the game I spent time with, because we were always together, sorting out the fire, sorting out camp. And I love Francois. I love Francois. But Chappies, that guy. Different character. Great character for Survivor, but your makes camp life harder. But I love Francois. Francois's great.
Let's talk about some camp life stuff, because some of the shenanigans continue through the pre-merge, despite the fact that you're able to make your way up from that minority. But there are some certain things, like, you know, you being very outspoken about the camp raid, and then at the Double Tribal Council, right, you're sort of pointing at Vuna, and you're like, well, they might as well make themselves comfortable because they're sitting on the jury. And I heard Kieran in this past episode call you volatile. Yes. What do you think of that? Is that you as a person? Was that something you were trying to play up to affect people's perceptions of you?
So there's a couple of things there. So, you know, let's start on the Double Tribal. The Double Tribal, there was a strategy going into it, which I discussed with my tribe beforehand, that I had two goals when I went to the tribal. I am going to put on a performance. I am. But I had two goals. One was to make old Zamba members feel so bad that they brought back the machete. And two was to throw Dino under the bus as much as possible. And that was my goal at that tribal, right? To make, and those two things happened. So there was always a method to the madness. Kieran calling me volatile can be perceived that way if all you've seen in me is tribal council. But I hadn't played with Kieran at all until we got to merge. And even at merge, there was already a camp split, camp divided between two sides. So it made it even harder. But you can see by Kieran's vote type that he thinks, you know, because like I literally built up this whole dab, so he even says, you know, didn't want to do this, but I think you're going to be a great dad, you know? It spoke to not who he is as an individual, which is an amazing guy. But we just didn't get that opportunity to connect on a game level, because he saw the camp Sean dad and he saw tribal Sean. We never really got that one-on-one time like I had with Anissa, like I had with Renee, like I had with Amy, like what I had with everyone else. I just didn't get that with Kieran. I even had many hours with Tyson. And we had some amazing grand plan. But yeah, Kieran's the one individual I unfortunately didn't get enough one-on-one time with.
Now let's talk about that Inesu relationship, because I'll admit I was a little surprised because we didn't see a lot of it, to have, you know, you telling her at the merge about all this stuff. It seems like from what I was interacting with both of you online, that I think it seems like you were maybe a bit behind what was going on with the chickens as well. Talk to me about the bond that you two had.
So me and Inesu were cuddle buddies. We laughed a lot. We had a great time. Amazing girl. And we had a little secret alliance going. And yeah, I helped with the chickens. I gave a speech saying, you know, how great it would be if we let the chickens out, make them give, you know, help them with the eggs, or make them feel good about the environment. Well, these bloody chickens, we got them out and they didn't go nowhere. Let's fucking stay at a camp. I'm like, stupid chicken. So we had a good laugh about that. But yeah, so me and Inesu had a great relationship, and we had a good strategic relationship. The reason I brought up those things to her when we reached merge is because I knew from a conversation with Tyson that she knew about Tyson's idol and that she knew about Marisha's idol. Mm. Right? So for me, I was like, okay, I'm going to ask you these two questions, which I really know the answers to. If she doesn't answer these two questions, I know we're in a heap of shit. And straight after that, you will see from that conversation, we're having a conversation with Santini, Smash, and myself. And as soon as Santini leaves, I say, listen, they've got Kieran, Ness is flipped, Tyson, Chappies will go there. You're going to have to do something about the vote. You might have to vote Tyson. So yeah, we had a good relationship, but I knew from that conversation that she was not in our corner anymore.
Let's go back to the sanctity of it all, because there's this really interesting voting confessional that I'm sure you saw for the first time yesterday, of her saying, "Ah, you should have come to me sooner." Talk to me about your entire thoughts on her during that 3-day period before you end up getting voted out. And do you think, after watching that back, if you had gone to her earlier to sort of extend that olive branch, that you would not be talking to me today?
Oh, there's so many rabbit holes you can go down. And I've done really well not to go down these rabbit holes, because at the end of the day, I appreciate Sanctum's gameplay because I've been playing with her from day one or Zumba 2.0. So I understand her gameplay. And you'll even see, like, when she has the confessional about taking out the duos, she says, we, not me. There's the we. So we had a lot of gameplay. And that's why, for me, no matter what I said about her, if I tried to convince her otherwise, she had a target on my back and I had a target on her back. We both wanted each other out because we both knew each other's game. My game was, her game was always making sure she's on the right side of the numbers. And my game was to make sure I threw you under the bus so I could get the numbers. So I did it with Paul. I did it with Mike. I did it with Dino. You know, I sufficiently threw them under the bus enough. And I think if we had stuck to the plan of throwing something under the bus and allowing me to go off at tribal, I would have had to convince one person to change their vote. And I had done so much driving of this bus around camp that it was impossible, no matter what I did, would have changed that vote. So I think if we'd just stuck to the original game plan, throw her under the bus, get one vote, I wouldn't be speaking to you now, because regardless of what happened after that Marisha vote, I was definitely the next one on the block.
I picked up on something really interesting you said, not only in your Ponderosa, but also going into the merge, that you had felt like, you know, a lot of people haven't been playing up to this point. You said it's a happy tribe, happy vibe mentality, even outside of the game. You said, you know, they're going to have to do a lot if they're going to want to earn my vote. Where did that perception come from? How were you looking at everyone else left in the game by the time you left it?
You could see that you could see by the complacency of Zumba at the first merge episode. Mm. Complacency is how you mess up your game in Survivor. You always got to be playing like you're down at the bottom. And as soon as you start getting too comfortable, that's when shit goes south. So yeah, you know, it's, for me, I saw so many people were just so used to winning that they were happy, they were complacent, they weren't playing the game anymore. They were just like, we've got this, no problem. You know, we got six, we're going to take this. No, you know, that's not how you play. So I think that that whole situation it's hard to describe when you're in it, because when you're on a minority alliance and you're losing every single week, you want to play hard, right? Mm-hmm. So you are playing hard. But when you're on a winning tribe and you're not losing, you're happy, you're complacent. And that's why I said, you know, happy tribe, happy vibe. Because every time Vuna came to a challenge or whatever it is, they would always come in, happy tribe, happy vibe. They would literally be saying that. Literally be saying that while we're dying of starvation. So they hadn't been playing. And I think it was evident in the merge episode. It was clearly evident.
Last thing I want to ask, you obviously experience a pretty big health scare in episode 4 with having this big allergic reaction. I want to check in with you. You know, are you okay now? Were you okay for the rest of the game? Did you ever figure out exactly what that was an allergic reaction to?
Was it pumpkin skin? So I don't eat pumpkin. I never have, never will. Every time I smell pumpkin, I want to throw up. So but when you're starving, you'll eat anything. I was eating ants. Come on, let's be honest. So ate the pumpkin, almost died. Look, my body wasn't really the same after that. I suffered from a few cramps, a few ailments, but that was my liver fucking up because of the infection. So yeah, it was definitely a surprise. Very much a surprise. I did not expect that. And I expected to hurt myself jumping off something, or like I fell out of the tree onto my back a few, like 6 feet. That was fine. The bloody piece of pumpkin skin almost took me out of the game.
That's the thing. In Survivor, you never know. You can't be too complacent. As you said, the pumpkin skin can blindside you at the end of the day.
Anything can blindside you.
Well, Sean, you know how much we loved everything you were bringing to this season between your confessionals, all the performances you were giving, etc. I'm sure we are not done yet because you're going to become a juror, and I'm sure you're going to have some reactions to have to everything else going on in the game. But I wanted to thank you for taking the time to talk with me today about everything with your game. It was a great time getting to see you, and I'm excited that we get to see Sean the juror now.
Yeah, no, it was a great experience. Being back in a heartbeat, and it's really nice hearing your guys' podcast. You know, I've been listening for years, just never cracked the nod. So it's a bittersweet moment for me. I do wish it was later, but yeah, this has been one hell of a ride, you know, all the way through. It hasn't stopped yet. We still have a whole season to get through. Oh, it's exciting.
Exactly. And I'm sure there is plenty more to come. So thank you so much again. Thank you for the kind words. All the best to you and your mom. And thanks so much again. Have a great weekend.
You as well. Thank you so much.
There you have it, everyone. Such a fun recap. Obviously a special one for me and a great exit interview with Sean as well. So I hope you've enjoyed all of that. We really appreciate your support as always. Hope you're following along with everything. Australian Survivor, Survivor South Africa. It's a lot at the moment, but we would not have it any other way. We did have it another way for a very long time, and that was not the way to be. So I'm loving all the Survivor. Thankful as always for your support, listening, checking this out. We'll see you next week. And until then, keep evolving. Bye.
Survivor,
New Zealand. Survivors.
Survivors.
21 South Africans,
12
ordinary Australians. 15
New Zealanders.
£1 million.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.